more than a decade, Saturdays and Illegal Curve have been synonymous with one another. With insight, analysis, and interviews regarding the Winnipeg Jets, the Manitoba Moose, and all around the NHL, here are Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all of those joining us live from parts unknown, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your temporary host, Dave Minuk. I'm joined by Ezra Ginsberg on my right. Drew is away.
Hello, hello.
We've given Drew the weekend off after he covered for me while I was obviously away, and he's covered for Ezzy too. So, I mean, we're going to give Drew some time off and we're going to make it the Minuk and Ginsberg show. Hopefully not another Dave Minuk experience like last night. Now, thankfully, Ezzy, I was doing the Minuk Moose Minute, so it was no hardship for me to fill the time. But, I mean, looking at my own mug alone wasn't quite as fun as getting a chance to look at you. So a little bit better when it's at least the two of us.
Yeah, I've got the charger going here. I had my computer unplugged, but I thought I was good because we had, I think, like 5 minutes left in the show, Dave, or something, 10 minutes left in the show. Yeah. And my battery on my MacBook was at 20%. But obviously, my computer now shuts down at 20%. And then we had that clock issue. We thought we were going back to Y2K and we were going to get jiggy with it there, pun intended. So, I've got the MacBook plugged in right now. The power cord is going. And we're ready to go here. I like this Ginsberg Minuk thing. It's more mic time. I mean, we don't to listen to Drew go on and on for 20 minutes. It's great.
No bloviating, no long soliloquies. This is just it's a little bit more short riffs than that sort of thing. So let's get back into it, Ezzy. We covered it obviously on last night's Illegal Curve post game show with probably most of the same people in the chat. We welcome everyone. Thanks very much for joining us on your Saturday morning.
Hopefully everyone got a good night's sleep.
As the Jets season grinds along and, you know, the inevitable continues to happen, but the Jets did fight back in last night's game, a 2-goal deficit to the number one team in the Western Conference, and clearly one of the Stanley Cup favorites, the Colorado Avalanche, who were obviously missing, you know, some important pieces in Girard and Landeskog and Kadri last night, but the Jets at least fought back in that third period. What were your overall takeaways, maybe, you know, now that you've had some time to pause and reflect on last night's game while you were sleeping, of course?
Yeah, exactly. I always think about the Jets when I'm sleeping. I don't dream about anything else, right, Dave? But
that's right.
It was a pretty overall solid effort, you know, by the Jets. We talked about, you know, the first period, they give up the early goal, but then they respond. They have the 1-goal lead. The second period was not very good, but, you know, the third period was, for the most part, you know, controlled by the Jets. And, you know, they tie up the game late there, and, you know, it's unfortunate that, you know, Ehlers takes the penalty, because Ehlers was arguably the Jets' best forward, maybe even best overall player yesterday. Connor Hellebuck was really solid. So I think, you know, even though the Jets' chances are still very slim of making the playoffs, and that point doesn't really do a lot. I mean, you obviously wanted the extra point, even though if you get that point, you still probably are, you know, a long shot to make the playoffs. I think, you know, for a team that has had a lot of losses lately and a lot of disappointing efforts, most recently Detroit, I think, you know, there's something to build off of there. And I think, you know, even though it's a cliche, when you start talking about, you know, getting that good feeling back in the room, I think, you know, it kind of goes back to, you know, what we said. I think it's not as much about, you know, getting 2 points, but the fact that you came back and tied the game up late against one of the best teams in the league, a Stanley Cup favorite. So, really liked Ehlers' game. You know, obviously Scheifele had a very strong game. Josh Morrissey, we talked about it. He, you know, made the big save. You know, Nathan MacKinnon was gunning for the empty net. So I think that's an impressive performance, because when you consider that a lot of people, you know, heading into this game thought the Avalanche were going to come in here and absolutely thump the Jets, especially with Blake Wheeler, you know, out of the lineup. Say whatever you want about Wheeler. He's been playing really well for the Jets, and you know that it's all hands on deck when you're playing a team like the Avalanche. So, yeah, I have no complaints overall about the way they played. I thought, you know, over the last 2 or 3 weeks, that's probably one of their better performances, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and we'll get into that a little bit later in the show in terms of points left behind on the table. And, you know, something we've talked about individually or consistently throughout the course of the season in individual games. But Scott Billick wrote a good article about 8 days ago for the Winnipeg Sun, kind of looking collectively at what all of those games that we've kind of talked about, you know, the Islanders games, the Coyotes games, those games that they probably should have won, didn't. And of course, that's the reason why the Jets are currently where they are, which is something, like I said, consistently we've talked about. We'll get into that a little bit later. But you know, Izzy, I agree with you. Like, it's the problem is there's no place for moral victories, right? Like, the Jets aren't in a situation where they can say, well, you know, we fought back. I mean, the truth is this season is essentially done. And so now it's a function of, well, what are you going to do? Right. You like you said, you've got guys who are playing exceptionally well. And the Moose, even though they got thumped last night, 7-2 final. I was wrong, actually, last night in the rush to get this. I saw the Jeff Mellott goal to make it 6-2, and that was late on the power play. I kind of figured that'd be the end, but it wasn't the end. The Moose gave up a seventh goal. So they lost 7-2 last night, a rare thumping for them. But, you know, the truth is it time to start, you know, looking at those guys and bringing up guys who are,
I think so,
you know, on the Moose. And we know the Moose are going to go on a playoff run, so that's not really a big factor, because, you know, you're not really going to change much in terms of the Moose position. I mean, they could end up falling to third, I guess, in theory, but most likely they're going to finish second or third.
The Moose have shown, Dave, that they can win even when, you know, some of their top players are called up, right? Like, we've seen that so many times this year. Earlier this season, they had something like 10 regulars. I mean, you would know better how many exactly players were out, but, you know, we've had a kind of a rotating cast of goaltenders, but... You know, at that one point when you had, you know, Sandberg, Heinola, Chisholm, you had all those defensemen up with the Jets, the Moose kept winning, right? So I think that's just right. Further speaks to your point about, I would expect that, you know, the Jets are going to call up some players in the next week or two.
Well, and that's the question I have for you, as is just, what do you think is the best play? Like, we saw Ville Heinola go down. He had an assist on the Mellott goal on the power play, big shot from the point, but, and that's important, right? You need him to be playing games, and he obviously had some games with the Jets. But they brought up Sandberg. And I suspect, you know, people got upset about that, but I really do think it's just part of a plan to get guys games. I think they wanted Sandberg playing with the Moose until they could call him up. And, you know, I just suspect, I mean, they really don't have a lot of left side guys left, because, like I said, Chisholm's injured and then the rest are all AHL guys, or AHL deals, I should say. So really it's Heinola and Sandberg right now as the two guys that would be recalled from the left side. But, you know, you've got Johnny Kovacevic, you've got Leon Gavanke, who I think the Jets have to take a look at some point with 10 games remaining on the season. The guy is a, you know, it's funny because everybody's like, oh, the Jets have tough. Evan Duncan, who's the play-by-play voice, not play-by-play voice, he's the PA announcer, sorry, for the Manitoba Moose. He tweeted at me saying, you know, the Jets have some tough decisions when it comes to defense and their prospects. And I said, well, technically they really don't, because all the left side guys are all waiver exempt still. So, well, in theory, those guys are ready to go, and I don't want people to jump in and say, well, they're all ready. I understand that, but I'm saying from a you know, a realistic standpoint, those guys, Chisholm, Heinola, and Sandberg, they're all waiver exempt next year. So those guys could all go back and forth between the Moose and the Jets, and there's no worries about losing them. On the other side, though, Simon Lundmark, who's on the right side, he's exempt as well for another couple of years. But you've got Johnny Kovacevic. He'll no longer be waiver exempt. My expectation is he'll be a full-time Winnipeg Jet next year. Maybe the sixth guy, maybe the seventh guy, kind of taking that Napoli, possibly, you know, we'll see what kind of summer he has. Maybe he gets a deeper role, obviously, depending on what happens with the Jets and what sort of decisions the team makes in terms of making trades this summer. But you got a guy like Johnny Kovacevic, who they're going to lose if they put him on waivers. And then Leon Gavanke, who didn't have a great last year, but he's bounced back this year and he's looked a lot better. So that's the kind of thing I think, you know, you're probably in agreement with me that you need to see from the Winnipeg Jets club over the next 10 games is, what do you have in these guys at the NHL level? It's useless to evaluate during the exhibition season, because the exhibition doesn't tell you a lot. You could get a team's AHL roster. Well, what does that tell me? We know what these guys look like when they're playing against the AHL. So you need to have them playing in NHL games, especially against some very good teams, and you want to see that. So that would be my thought. What do you think about that?
No, I would agree with everything you said there, Dave. And I think, you know, just to go back to that idea of waiver exempt, the reason why that's so important is because not only, you know, for this year and it's next year. I mean, that's kind of implied, but I think it's not going to be as easy to call these players up. Like, you're going to have to, it's going to be a little trickier, I guess, if you want to call it that, because of the waiver issue. Because if you call a guy up next year, you know, that wasn't in your plans to be part of your, you know, regular seven or regular eight defenseman. I mean, it's possible that a guy like Leon Gavanke or Johnny Kovacevic would be claimed off of waivers, right? Just because of their age and their salary. Those guys are really attractive, right? So I think for me, it's not a question of if those guys are going to be called up. It's at what point, like how close to the end of the season are those guys going to be called up? Like, I don't think they're going to be called up in the next 2 or 3 days. I would expect it to be probably, you know, the week after next week or the last week of the season, right? Because you're going to have to find room for them to play, right? Like, Johnny Kovacevic, we know, is a right shot defenseman, and Leon Gavanke is also a right shot defenseman, as you mentioned, correct, Dave. Like, there's there's a plethora of left shot defensemen. Declan Chisholm, I'm not sure, you know, if he'll be back in time to play any Jets games. He would be a guy, though, I would think, too, you might want to see a little bit more. Just going back to Dylan Samberg, Dave, I think that, you know, you would expect Samberg is going to stay, you know, for the foreseeable future. I'm not sure if he, you know, plays every single game. I would imagine he doesn't play every single, you know, remaining Jets game. There's 10 games left. But I would expect him, you know, considering that, you know, there's a really good shot he's going to be part of your top six or your top seven next year. So, you know, there's a glut here. There's going to be a lot of, you know, tough decisions to make for the defenseman. You have, you know, arguably the best decor in the AHL right now with the Moose, right? Like, Gavanke is a guy that, you know, is kind of forgotten, right? And you've been watching him and you've been, you know, praising him all season long. Like, 8 goals, 33 points. Like, he's just a kind of one of those good all-around defensemen, right? Like, he's got some physicality to his game. So he's, I think, a guy you definitely want to see. And then, you know, in terms of forwards, the big one who, you know, everybody kind of is calling for these days is David Gustavsson. And as you know, and as a lot of Jets and Moose fans know, he's in COVID protocol right now.
Right.
But you wonder, you know, when he's out of COVID protocol, you would have to think that possibly, you know, Gustavsson is a guy that, you know, that gets a call up. But, you know, it's kind of tough right now with some of the injuries and, you know, 10 games left. I would expect kind of you to see a bigger exodus, if you want to call it that, from the Moose to the Jets, probably with, you know, 5 or 6 games left, as opposed to 10 games left, maybe 3 or 4 games left. But I think it's going to be really interesting to see, because some of these guys are going to factor in more to the Jets' plans next year, right? Like, there's going to be some turnover, both on defense and on forward. And, you know, people are probably saying, well, you know, a lot of these guys on defense are signed long-term, but you never know. I mean, based on how the season is goes, there's not too many guys whose job is safe. I mean, like, you'd say, like, guys like Josh Morrissey, Neil Pionk, you know, Nate Schmidt, like, these guys they're most likely not going to get moved. But I mean, we know that the Jets defense has not been good enough this year. So I think you want to see, you know, how some of these guys currently playing for the Moose, the guys that you've drafted, are going to fit into your lineup. So, yeah, I think, you know, probably the week after next week with, you know, 5 or 6 games left, we're going to start to see, you know, guys like Gavanke and Kovacevic and, you know, maybe David Gustavsson. We'll see. Ville Heinola is a really interesting one to me, Dave, because I didn't think that he was going to get sent down to the Moose. So I'm not sure if we're going to see him back with the Jets. I mean, you know, maybe we do. But it seems like right now they'd rather him, you know, play top pair minutes with the Moose.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I'm the biggest proponent of guys playing rather than watching. I think it's a complete waste of time. They're like, well, they're practicing with the big club. That's good, but practice is only has so much value. And one of the quotes, you know, I wrote about the culture of the Manitoba Moose and how it's impacting the Jets prospects last week. And you know, Dave Lowry was asked about it, and he had some interesting comments about, you know, building a winning culture with your AHL club. And it's funny because I hearken back to the days of Chase DeLeo calling it the dark days in 2015 when they were like a 20-win club. And it was like...
At least he had his dog, Chase Jr., though.
I don't know if he had Chase Jr. at that point, 2015, 16, but he may have. But he did have secret access to the Winnipeg Zoo.
Didn't he have him on and he brought his dog on? Like, he had his dog with him or something?
Yeah, but I think that was...
Somebody asked him about his dog.
I think that was in the summer, though. I think that might have been that later that summer or the summer after. But the point is that, you know, Dave Lowry spoke about the idea of building a winning culture in the AHL and how important it is for the prospects and what it can do for them. And we talked about what it did for the, you know, the Vancouver Canucks when they had the Manitoba Moose as their farm club. And, you know, they were able to have a lot of those guys, you know, become regulars eventually. And, you know, obviously ride that to a little bit of a Stanley Cup run against the Boston Bruins, which ultimately they lost, but still it was important for those guys to get that sort of experience. And Mark Morrison, it was funny because it allowed me to use a quote Mark Morrison had said in a post game with me, you know, a little bit, I think it was earlier than the month of March. And he basically talked about how important playoffs are. He said 2 rounds of the playoffs are essentially like a full season in pro hockey. So if the Moose play, think about that though, right? So think about the idea of Dylan Samberg, Ville Heinola, Johnny Kovacevic, Simon Lundmark, Leon Gavanke, Declan Chisholm, David Gustavsson. Unfortunately, no Cole Perfetti. That would have been really important for Cole Perfetti. You know, Morgan Barron. You know, there's a list of guys who are going
to
get.
He can, for those who are wondering, he is eligible to go back down to the Manitoba Moose because he's played in the American Hockey League. I believe if he hadn't played in the
American Hockey League. He was already fine.
Okay.
He was on the Hartford Wolfpack AHL roster when he got traded. So he was actually in the AHL at the time. So that was totally fine. He was able to be assigned to the Moose. And so he was on the Moose roster for.
They've got some nice reinforcements coming, right?
Well, for sure. And you know what, to be honest with you, there's two couple players who I think it's going to have the most impact on. And is Mikael Burton, because Mikael Burton is waiver exempt next year. So he's another guy.
Well, that's another guy that we didn't talk about, right? You mentioned that earlier this year, and I think it was a good point that you made, Dave. Like, does Mikael Burton get a start or two with the Jets?
Well, if he didn't get that start in Pittsburgh on the back-to-back. Now, Connor Hellebuyck was good that game, but I thought for sure that was it. Remember, Eric Comrie was in COVID protocol, so Mikael Burton was backing up, and he backed up all those games, but he never got into any action himself. He has had an up-and-down season. He's been a little bit better of late. He's won his last two starts with the Moose, and I think that, you know, I don't think it's critical that you give him a look this year. I mean, especially it's kind of hard to carry three goaltenders, especially with, you know, consideration stuff to consider the salary cap.
You would think, Dave, that would be one of the last couple games of the season. If they give Burton a game, it wouldn't be, you know,
the
week after. It'd be like game 80 or 81 or something.
Right, exactly. But I mean, again, like I said, because he's waiver exempt, it's not as big a factor. I mean, I think it's something they may want to consider, but, you know, I think it's not as big a consideration. And like I said, I think there's the reality that you're going to have all of these guys. So think about the development path for next year for this Jets club. And having all of these guys gain this, and again, I'm not guaranteeing that they will be a Calder Cup finalist or win the Calder Cup, but I mean, this team is good enough to you know, look, they may be playing Milwaukee, a team that thumped them last night. They've been pretty good against Milwaukee. They've won 6 of the 11 games, but you know, that means Milwaukee's won 5. So it's one thing. And I think 2 of the games Milwaukee lost were overtime games, and 1 of the games the Moose lost were overtime games. So they've been very close. The only advantage, and this is something we often forget or don't factor in for the AHL, is, of course, that a lot of the rosters will be pillaged by the NHL clubs for taxi squads. So, you know, Milwaukee being the Nashville farm club, they'll lose players inevitably for Nashville, who will be a playoff team. That would be a benefit.
Cody Glass, for example.
Cody Glass, who had 2 goals last night, Winnipeg, who had 2 goals against the Moose last night. So that's something you have to factor in. Of course, Rockford. It's actually in Chicago, I think, is there Seattle, and Seattle's got nobody left, really, and Carolina. But Carolina will take a lot of those guys and put them on their taxi squad. So that's going to be a big loss for Chicago, who the Moose are playing tonight at 7 o'clock to wrap up their road trip. But if you think about it, and then Rockford's the only other team who they'll get some guys back from Chicago. Of course, some of the guys they got in some of their trades this year. So Rockford could end up being a little bit better than we've seen. And then, you know, maybe we see a Johnny Kovac. No, is it? I think. Who was it? Was it Kovacevic went to college with Colin Delia? So I mean, there'll be maybe be some big rivalry, or maybe it was Jeff Malott. I don't remember. It was one of those two. No, it was Kovacevic that went to college with Delia. So there could be some good rivalry, some good fun in the AHL playoffs. But again, the importance of these guys gaining that experience, and then we'll talk about it more throughout the course of the show, because we don't want to go too long with this. But there is that element of what are you going to do this summer? You know, I know what you did last summer. That was you went out and got a bunch of defensemen. What are you going to do this summer when you've got, as you just said, a glut of guys ready?
I didn't do much last summer, actually, Dave. So
We didn't have any time last summer because we went very long.
The playoffs went late last year.
Everything went late. I mean, it was the dumbest thing of all time, playing playoffs whenever they did. Like, who cares? Nobody cared about it. But
when did that Jets Canadian series end? Was that end of June? No, it was more like mid July.
It was no, I don't think
it was that late. It wasn't that late. Two years earlier, it was that late.
Well, it was in August. I mean, it was like I said, the NHL is so arrogant and they think that people care. And don't get me wrong, some people enjoy being able to watch from the lake. But if your team's not in it, nobody cares. Like, everybody would rather be at the lake, I think.
Yeah, the bubble year was tough.
Well, if you look at the numbers and there are people, I love the arrogance of the NHL. They're like, well, you know, people loved it. I'm like, did you look at their numbers the last 2 years? Like, nobody watched the playoffs. Nobody watched the Stanley Cup. So, I mean, people might have tuned in, but then they quickly tuned out. Like, they might have watched the clinching game and that was it. So, anyways, getting back to this idea of, like, the prospects and what you've created in terms of, you know, there's a logjam. And we thought there was a logjam last summer, you know, when you brought in Brendan Dillon and when you brought in Nate Schmidt, and, you know, the Jets, and Corey made a really good point, I think, in terms of the Jets really, by not auditioning guys, you didn't get it. And that's what we're talking about right now. By not auditioning guys, you don't know what you have in the system, really, at the NHL level. And so how do you evaluate them? And it's important to evaluate at the AHL, but you're playing against the AHL competition. The NHL is the best league in the world. The AHL is a very good league. It's not the best league in the world. So you need to evaluate Mikael Berdan playing against, you know, the Sidney Crosbys, the, you know, McKinnons, like all of those upper echelon players, to see how they can handle playing against them. You know, same with Leon Gavanke, same with Johnny Kovacevic. You know, you gave these guys a taste.
Dylan Samberg, and another guy too, you know, I just saw a few people in the chat here talking about Christian Vesalainen.
Right. Well, he was like, the other one, he's the other one I wanted to mention and was going to get your take.
Well, and, you know, Vesalainen has had a disappointing year. There's no doubt about that. But, I mean, people are, you know, in the chat talking about, you know, someone, I saw Noah Lafleur talking about Cody Glass for Vesalainen. I would do that in a heartbeat, by the way. I don't necessarily know if David Poile is going to do that trade. I don't think Cody Glass is a bust, by the way, the people talking about Glass. I mean, like he's 22 years old. He was just drafted 5 years ago. So not every player, you know, is going to be an NHL superstar at 20 years old, right? So I think Glass.
I think Cody Glass, if Cody Glass was on the Manitoba Moose right now, he'd be the leading scorer by about 20 points.
Well, and Glass is also, you know, he's putting up good numbers, as you mentioned, right? With the Admirals. Yeah. So, I mean, just give him some time. Nashville's a pretty deep team at the forward position, right? So I think he's going to be okay. Just give him, you know, another year or two. But I think, you know, what you're saying here, Dave, is, you know, back to a guy like Vesalainen, like, now the games don't have the same importance, right? Like, yeah, you want to beat Ottawa, you want to beat Montreal in the next couple games, but you know that even if you, you know, run off a 10-0 run, you could still miss the playoffs. So yeah, I mean, you're hoping, but Chevy's realistic. The coaching staff is realistic. Do they think they could go 10-0? I mean, anything can happen. Hockey's random and crazier things have happened here, but I think they know that what the stakes are right now, and the stakes are not the same as they were a couple of weeks ago, right? When you were 3 points back of Dallas or 2 points back of Vegas, you're 7 or 8 points back right now. I forget exactly what it is, but you're done. You're done. Yeah. So I'm sorry. I mean, 0.1%. I mean, you can cling on to that as much as you want, but when there's only 3 weeks left in the season, 0.1% is basically negative percent at this point, right? So yeah, I think, you know, could you see Vesalainen? Possibly, not because you're showcasing him, because you want to see, like, what's he going to do for you? How badly does he want to be a member of this Jets organization, or just, you know, what he can do? But there's no doubt that you're going to see other players called up, because why wouldn't you? I mean, you're just wasting opportunities, and I just don't see the Jets doing that. Like, I do think that we're not saying all of these players are going to get the call up, but, you know, at least one or two of these guys, you know, the Gavankes, the, you know, Johnny Kovacevic's. You know, I was mentioning this to you right before we went live here, Dave. Like, you know, CJ Cease has had a good year. I know he's been injured a little bit, but, you know, do you reward CJ Cease? You know, and I realize there's, you know, implications there. And, you know, the Moose, or he's one of the top players for the Moose, but a player like that, right? Like, do you reward him, give him
he's
a game?
Very good, by the way.
Because didn't he play one game earlier this season for the Jets?
Yeah, he's played for the Jets. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if it was
one
game.
I think he played two games this year.
There we go, two games. He's already played two games, but that was a long time ago. So, you know, could CJ Cease get a call up? Those types of things happen towards the end of the season for teams aren't going to make the playoffs, right? They reward guys like, you know, could we see Jeff Malott again? You've been talking about, you know, Jeff Malott's got 21 goals, 22 goals right now. Do you reward 22? Jeff Malott, do you reward him and give him another game or two? I mean, he's a guy that could be a fourth liner for the Jets next year.
That's right. And he needs a new contract. Right? And he needs a new contract. So, exactly. I mean, you're right, Ez. That's one of those things. But we don't need a new contract, but we do need to go to a commercial break before we bring Jamie Thomas on the show. First time ever Jamie Thomas is going to be joining us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
I still can't believe that. Because we've known Jamie for so long. I just can't believe that we've never had him on before.
Well, I mean, I don't want to say the guy.
It's obviously Drew's fault.
I was going to say, I don't want to say who the guy who books guests are. Oops, sorry, wrong way. But we'll blame that person.
Anyways, book all the guests.
Here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, we will be right back after these words from our sponsor. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. As I'm a little winded, usually I've got some time to keep my phone on my computer on mute right now, and Drew would be doing his long-winded return from break, and you and I would be just finished our catch-up, but instead it's you and I now doing this, so I'm a little
winded. You're panting a little bit there, Dave M.
I'm a little, because I was a little bit running up all those stairs, you know, 18 flights of stairs. It's difficult to get get up to the main.
The rare 18-story house in River Heights.
Yeah, yeah. Just if you're looking, if you're driving and you see all these normal 2-story houses and all of a sudden you see an 18-story one, that would be my maison. So that's the clue if you're looking for me in River Heights. However, we are about to be joined by Jamie Thomas of he's of Jets TV, he's of CJOB 680. He does some radio caller commentary alongside our boy Paulie Edmonds. So we're going to have Jamie on. We're going to talk Jets with Jamie. And while we wait for Jamie to come on, we'll continue our discussion, I think, about I like how everybody's excited about the fact that I keep sneaking in these Manute Moose minutes. But right now we're at the point of the season when you're no longer really focused on the playoffs, that you're talking about the kids and what they're going to do. And I think Christian Vesalainen to me is a really interesting one. And that's kind of what I was going towards when I said Mark Morrison's comment about what playoffs can do for a player. And I think, and I could be wrong, but I don't think from a forward perspective, I don't think any player is going to have a more critical postseason than Christian Vesalainen. And I was happy to see the Jets put him on the roster and assigned him to the AHL to make him eligible to play in the playoffs, because I think it's incredibly important for Christian Vesalainen's kind of unconventional development, right? He was here with the Jets, then went to the Moose, then went back to Liga, Jets, Moose. Like, he's been here, there, and everywhere. And you have to figure out what you've got in him, really. You've got to figure out what kind of player he is. He's kind of like he's kind of this like round, you know, they're trying to fit a round peg into a square hole. It just doesn't seem to be working. Like, you're not going to turn him into a fourth line grinder. He's not an elite scorer. So what exactly is Christian Vesalainen, right? And then that to me is, maybe this is something he kind of gets. Maybe he just finds a scoring touch in the playoffs. I'm not suggesting it's going to happen, but I just think, like, whatever development, you know, that Mark Morrison was talking about, and I trust Mark Morrison, he's been in hockey a long time. Like, we'll see if that has that kind of impact on a player like Christian Vesalainen. And it won't be, like I said, our focus isn't just going to be on him. I just think of all the Jets prospects, he will be the one who probably requires this more than most.
Yeah. And, you know, he's played, you know, well over half of the games, 53 games, I think, you know, this year. And he obviously doesn't have, you know, a lot of points, but I think, you know, it's not just about the games played, Dave. It's, you know, the role that he's been used. He's been kind of yo-yoed up from fourth line to third line and everything like that. Right. So I think that, you know, this is kind of it for Christian Vesalainen. I mean, these last 10 games, if he does get into some game for the Jets, this is kind of his, not I wouldn't say last shot at proving himself, but he can definitely, you know, change his fortunes to a certain extent by putting in some good efforts. But that's where, you know, the Manitoba Moose and the good position that they're in, you know, to go on a decent playoff run. Hopefully it's going to be a long playoff run that's going to result in the 2022-23 Calder Cup, right? And I'm assuming, Dave, you'll be on the ice to hoist that thing as well. But
22-23, Ezzy, that would be next year.
Pardon me, 21-22 is what I meant to say. I'm getting ahead of myself here.
I'm like, Ezzy, don't fast forward us a whole year. I mean, we just got to summer. I don't want to have to deal with another winter that quickly.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I think that, you know, Vesalainen's an interesting one. His name has been, you know, bandied about in terms of possibly being traded. You know, we'll see if that happens. But yeah, there's no doubt, Dave, that even though we don't know this, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they give him another shot. And maybe giving him elevated role, right? Like, give him some power play time and, you know, put him in some different positions than you wouldn't have otherwise put him in earlier in the season. But yeah, he's definitely left more to be desired. I don't think, you know, he's a bust. I hate to use that when you're talking about 22 and 23-year-old players, because look at a guy like Jesse Puljujärvi, right? Who was drafted just the year before in 2016. I mean, we thought he might be a bust. And, you know, he's contributing with the Oilers. He's having a pretty good season, right? So, yeah, we'll see what happens with Vesalainen. But you're right. It's kind of his future and his future role specifically with the Jets is a little bit unclear at this point.
Yeah, and Matthew Thompson makes a good point. He says, I have actually looked at the forecast. Matthew, you should have been on last night's show. I talked about the fact that winter was coming, not a Game of Thrones reference, unfortunately. Although I believe the prequel to Game of Thrones, for those who watch it, like I may have and read the books like I did, is coming soon as well this summer. But I do, I am aware, unfortunately, that winter is coming back to Manitoba. Hopefully it just hits southern Manitoba and, you know, they leave us here in Winnipeg alone. And just, no offense to those folks down there, but I know it's funny, Ezzy, it's ironic. Where is it coming from? It's a Colorado low, I believe is what they call it. So the Jets experienced a bit of a Colorado low last night. And now the folks of Manitoba won't be left alone by Colorado well, as well as the folks in Minnesota and North Dakota and South Dakota and that sort of
thing. This whole winter has been a Colorado low.
Yeah, yeah. And Gilbert Marion makes a good point. Did it leave? Well, briefly, I would say, kind of almost a little bit, but we'll see what happens with the weather here in Winnipeg and in the rest of Manitoba. Hopefully it's not too bad. Hopefully you're enjoying your Saturday morning. Thank you very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I am Dave Minuk, a.k.a. IC Dave. He is Ezra Ginsberg, a.k.a. IC Ezzy G. You should be following both of us for interesting tidbits on Twitter. So please do give us a follow. And thank you for following the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the Illegal Curve postgame show, IllegalCurve.com for all your latest Jets and Moose news. And of course, you know, make sure you smash that like button and drop a comment. Let us know what you think of the show. Preferably positive comments, but we'll take whatever you think. If there's areas that we need to improve, we're always willing to hear some criticism, preferably via email as opposed to in the comments.
Hey, Dave, there's no such thing as bad publicity, right?
Well,
I always had a problem with that because there is definitely such a thing as bad publicity. But yeah, I mean, we like good comments, but hey, I mean,
yeah, well, we can
handle the odd little bit of hate.
That's what, well, you know, Ezzy, as we often use the slang, we are fueled by hate, not fueled by passion. We don't believe in passion, but we are fueled by hate.
No, you forgot the second part of that. We are fueled by hate of each other. Like Drew and I. Yeah.
Okay. I thought you were
actually. Not of other people, just the three of us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, self-inflicted hate.
MBHAA, ball hockey says the show's okay. So that's, you know, that's the kind of comment. We'll take it. It's not a great, you know, it's not super positive. But you know what? Like I said, we'll take whatever we can get. Well, we're waiting for Jamie Thomas. He's just dealing with some issues right now getting online. So we'll keep it rolling as we'll keep talking about the Winnipeg Jets and where they go from here. We know where they are literally going from here. They're going to Ottawa and then they're going to Montreal. They're playing a quick two-game back-to-back road trip. They've got they were supposed to practice today. Not surprisingly, they canceled that and they're just going to hit the road and they're going to take off for Ottawa. What are you thinking, Ez, in terms of goaltending? Do you think, I mean, I would have to imagine at this point you're going to go Eric Comrie either tomorrow or Montreal. But you got to give Eric Comrie some starts. You know, I mean, obviously he didn't have his best outing the last game, but prior to that, he'd won five straight. So you got to go, I would think at this point in the season, there's no reason, like you don't need Hellebuck to play 70 games. It's just unnecessary. Let him get some rest and you got to give Eric Comrie at least, I would think at least a third to half of the starts remaining of this season.
Yeah, absolutely. You're going to see Comrie in one of these next two games coming up. I mean, we might as well just flip a coin in terms of what game it's going to be. We'll find out probably at the last minute. But you're right. I think if the Jets were a point behind the Stars or 2 points behind the Stars, closer to that second wildcard spot, then yeah, you might roll Hellebuck back-to-back. I think we've seen Hellebuck back-to-back more times this year than we ever have, right? I want to see, like, we say we've seen him three times or four times this year. I'd have to go back.
I don't want to credit Drew. I was going to say, I don't want to give Drew too much credit, Ezzy, but the point is that Drew's mentioned on this show a couple of times now that, you know, Hellebuck's numbers in back-to-back have been pretty good.
Absolutely. So I don't think there's just no reason. Like there's absolutely no reason to play Connor Hellebuck in back-to-back games. I mean, there would be, as I said, if you desperately needed those points, and they do desperately need the points, but I think it's a charade at this point. And I'm an optimistic guy, Dave. You know, I'm a glass half full type of guy. But mm-hmm. when you combine, you know, the loss to the Kings, the loss to the Red Wings, and then, you know, the loss last night to the Colorado Avalanche, I mean, it's just it's too many points to make up, right? And then Dallas has the games in hand. So it's just we're being realistic. We're not being negative. We're not crushing anybody's dreams or anything like that. I think most people in the chat would agree with us that, you know, it would almost take a minor miracle at this point. And I do believe in miracles, by the way, but I just don't necessarily know that there is going to be a miracle here for Jets fans. It's just there's just not enough time left. You only have 10 games left, and there's only so many points that you can get in those 10 games. And we know that Dallas isn't going to lose every single one of their games, which would be the miracle, right? So, we'll see Comrie. You know, if I had to guess, we'd probably see Comrie tomorrow night against Ottawa, and then you'd see Hellebuck in Montreal. So because I said that, it'll probably be the opposite, because anybody who listens to the show knows that whenever I guarantee something, it's usually goes horribly, horribly wrong. But yeah, and not only, you know, past these next two games, Dave, yeah, I think, you know, out of these last 10 games, you'd probably, you know, get Comrie three or four times, I imagine. You know, Hellebuck, we know his workload has been very heavy. And then we'll see if Mikael Burden, you know, does get a start. I would like to see it personally. I know that, you know, nobody's been tracking Burden more than you have. And I love every time you post one of those videos or you tweet about his puck handling ability, Dave, because you know that, you know, I'm a huge Marty Brodeur fan. I realize he hasn't been in the NHL for a while, but as far as I'm concerned, he's the best puck handling goaltender of all time. I mean, I think, you know, there's some other good ones too. Ronnie Hextall would be up there as well. But so I think Mikael Burden, I mean, you're not calling him up for his puck handling ability, but you know what I mean? I think, you know, it'd be nice to see him, you know, play, you know, a game in the NHL. And look at, I mean, towards the end of the month of April, you've got that killer road trip where you play, what is it, Carolina, you play Tampa Bay, the Rangers.
Yeah, you Florida, go, you, maybe. I think it's Tampa, Florida, New York, Carolina.
Right. So maybe you put Burden in one of those games. Like, and I don't think you're throwing him to the fire. You're definitely not throwing him to the fire that's behind you on the TV screen, Dave. But I think, you know, you're it's a test, it's a challenge for him, right? So we might not see it, we may see it, but regardless, I think, you know, of these last 10 games, I would expect Comrie to get at least, you know, three starts.
Well, and that's, you know, Kenny's water bottle will give him the dap here, because he asked the question, do the Jets believe that Comrie is officially their long-term backup? Now, he's a homegrown product, right? A 2013 draft pick. We covered him. That was our first draft that we were, well, technically second for you, first time that Illegal Curve went down as a group together, because, of course, you were in 2011 in Minnesota in St. Paul. You were there, but 2013 when we were down in New Jersey, staying in New York, hashtag Times Square, no big deal. But the point is that we were at that draft, and Comrie has been, he's been the face of the Moose franchise. He's, you know, the all-time winningest goaltender. He's got all sorts of accolades for his time in the Moose. As everybody knows who's listened to this show, I said he's capable as an NHL backup if given that role. We talked to him last summer. He talked about how he was prepared. He was his preparation. Well, what did we see? We saw a guy who looked like he was capable of being an NHL backup. So to me, I would think Mikael Burden has been inconsistent the last couple of years, to be honest with you, at the AHL level. That's a real big risk. Now, again, he's waiver exempt next year, so you're not going to have to worry about it. You can play Mikael Burden with the Moose. He could be the number one guy. Arvid Holm will be the number two guy, and you've got your tandem set for next year. Holm, longer project. We'll see what happens with him. But right now, to me, Burden and Holm, those are your guys that you're going to run with at the AHL level. And I personally think that Comrie is a guy who can play, who's shown that he can play at the NHL level, and who can be that backup role. So I personally think you reward a guy who likes being in Winnipeg, likes the team, knows the organization. That's my feeling. I mean, maybe I'm a little biased because we enjoy Eric Comrie as a person, but I think that, you know, he's a guy who's shown that he's capable. I mean, Lauren Brossoit hasn't exactly had a good start in Vegas, but it's fallen a little bit off the wagon for Lauren Brossoit and the Vegas Golden Knights. Who saw that coming? Not many people. But I think that Eric Comrie's shown, you know, I mean, there aren't a ton of guys who are necessarily clamoring to come to Winnipeg, but maybe he, especially knowing that Connor Hellebuyck is going to play the lion's share of games.
Well, that's just it, right? You need to find a goaltender. Kind of reminds me of, you know, sorry, I apologize. I'm a Devils fan from way back, but it kind of reminds me of like Scott Clemenson, if you guys remember that name, or Chris Terreri, like guys that backed up Marty Brodeur, because Marty Brodeur, similar to Hellebuyck, right? Like 1 year, mm-hmm. I think Brodeur played 76 games 1 year. I'd have to check. It was something like 76 or 77 games. No one does that anymore. I feel like Braden Holtby might have been close, though. Remember that 1 year Holtby was... Mm-hmm. Was up there, but yeah, I think it takes a unique goaltender. You know, you're probably not bringing in like an established, you know, goaltender who is used to playing, right, like 40 to 50 games.
Right.
So yeah, at this point, I mean, you know, a lot of things can change. Nobody knows. Nobody has a crystal ball, but I would expect Eric Comrie to be the Jets backup this year. And I think he's been one of the best stories for the Jets. Like, you know, Kyle Connor, you know, has been a great story, you know, going for 50 goals. I think we're going to, you know, talk a little bit about that here coming up. And, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois had a great year. Josh Morrissey, you know, career high in points. He's had a great bounce back year. But Eric Comrie, you know, just look at his numbers. He's got great numbers and he hasn't played a lot. So I think that's even more impressive when a goaltender, you know, doesn't play for 7 days, 10 days, 14 days, and then comes mm-hmm. in and wins a game. So, yeah, I mean, if you're asking me, I think there is a really good chance that Comrie is going to be the backup for the Jets next year.
Well, and again, and you know it, as you just touched on it, we'll leave the Eric Comrie discussion for now. That's something we're going to be talking about quite a bit throughout the course of this summer, I suspect. Summer coming a little bit sooner for Jets fans than they were hoping. Of course, not officially yet, of course, but we'll see what happens in that regard very soon, I would expect. But, you know, and especially as because if they have games against Ottawa and Montreal, I mean, Ottawa came in here and beat the Jets, but if they are able to take it and defeat those two teams, it might create a little bit of a mirage, make things go a little bit longer. But like you said, four games against Tampa, Florida, Carolina, and New York might put things back into greater perspective for this Jets club. One of the best stories of this year, I mean, Pierre-Luc Dubois bouncing back, no question about it, has been an excellent story. But I think when we look back on the 2021-22 season, the story that everyone's going to be talking about, I think, is the Kyle Connor chase for 50. You know, he's at, I think, 41 goals right now, and he's been lights out. I mean, it's unfortunate, you know, that being put into COVID protocol cost him those three games, especially going and having that opportunity, because he was feeling it. And now, you know, it's, like I said, it's a little bit harder when you're out of rhythm to get back into it. But just how exciting has that story been for Jets fans, and just how amazing has Kyle Connor's elevation been, you know, to a guy who, look, we haven't seen a guy score over 40 goals. It's only happened once for the Jets 2.0. That was Patrick Laine when he scored 44 in his rookie season. So it's not something that it just happens every single day.
Yeah, and it's not like, you know, Connor's been a revelation and all of a sudden we're, you know, expecting, you know, like he's been putting up, you know, big goal totals for a while now. And, you know, it's not just the goals as well. It's his playmaking ability, right? You've talked about it, Mr. Even Steven, 41 goals, 41 assists. But hey, you're right. It's unfortunate that, you know, he missed those three games, but you've got 10 games here to score 9 goals. And for most players, you would say, oh, that's going to be really tough. But, you know, would anybody be surprised if, you know, Connor scores 2 or 3 goals against Ottawa or, you know, 2 or 3 goals against Montreal? Then all of a sudden, you know, you've got 8 games left and you've got, you know, 45 goals or something like that. Then it seems a lot easier. Austin Matthews, by the way, is, you know, doing something that I don't know if many people thought he was going to be, you know, a 60 goal scorer at this point in his career. I think a lot of people thought, you know, low 50s. But Matthews has really been incredible. So obviously, you know, missing those 3 games for Connor, he's definitely out of the Rocket Richard race. He was in there for a little while, for sure. But it's just, you know, it's been incredible to watch. We were watching the third period here yesterday, Dave, and, you know, just his skating and in overtime, you know, like he is just, you know, he has always been a very talented, really talented forward, but, you know, he's arguably a top 3 goal scorer in the league. Right. And top 10, I would say, you know, top 10 offensive forward. I mean, it's tough, it's subjective and everything like that. At the very least, he's a top 20 offensive forward, and he would have factored in big time if the NHL participated at the Beijing Olympics back in February. But yeah, it's just been an incredible season. And in a year in which, you know, the cliche term inconsistent has been used so much by us, by everybody, he has been Mr. Consistent. Kyle Connor has, you know, very few bad games. And, you know, he hasn't scored a goal in his first 2 games back from COVID. But, you know, I'm not going to do a Ginsburg guarantee because that usually is a Ginsburg jinx. But I bet he's going to start scoring some goals maybe as early as tomorrow night. And one thing I also wanted to mention, Dave, Connor's play on the PK, you know, is something that I think has to be given some airtime here, because we all know that this guy can put the puck in the net and he's one of the best offensive players in the league. But he has really turned into a valuable penalty killer for the Jets. That's not a role that we've seen him play much over the years. And, you know, credit Paul Maurice and Dave Lowry and the coaching staff, you know, they've showed confidence in him. But I think, you know, just wanted to get that in there as well. His ability to kill penalties and use that speed and create turnovers has been really impressive. So yeah, it's just been a phenomenal year for Connor. It's really a pleasure to watch him on a nightly basis.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about it. And you're right, Ezzie. It is an interesting development to see Kyle Connor get to that, you know, add the PK element to his game. And it's important because one of the knocks on Kyle Connor was his defensive game, right? His defensive game was somewhat lacking because he thought offense, and he's become a driver, right? And before, you know, if you remember Blake Wheeler's words to Paul Maurice, give us the kid. And, you know, Kyle Connor was good, but Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, those guys were the drivers of that line. Kyle Connor is a driver of a line. Kyle Connor is the guy who is driving the bus. And he's become more, Kyle Connor is not going to be the most outspoken guy. He's a very quiet, very reserved person, at least with the media. And that's a general sense I get with him. But he is a guy who has become a more outspoken pro player in the sense that he does speak more often than he used to. I think, again, I don't have the the hard numbers in front of me to look at and to verify my claim, but just based on the fact
let that me pull out the spreadsheet, Dave.
Just based on the fact that you know, we do watch so many of these availabilities, I would think that Connor's spoken more this year than he has previously. And I think that's a good sign for the Winnipeg Jets, because he is a guy who, you know, I mean, like I said, he doesn't say a lot, but he's an important voice, I think, in that Jets dressing room. And well, we know he's an important player on the ice, but I think he's an important voice in that Jets dressing room and what he's able to do. So it's been remarkable, especially given the fact that he had a tough summer, you know, not something that he's talked about very much. And so you've got a situation where he just, like I said, quietly came in and just performed so admirably for this Winnipeg Jets club. And when you look at, you know, we've always talked about Mark Scheifele's contract being a steal. And like, look, there's a lot to talk about with Mark Scheifele, and I'm sure we'll talk about him more as well. But, you know, you might not like his defensive play, and there's a lot lacking in his defensive game. But one thing you can't really question is his offensive game, because even though it's been a down year for Mark Scheifele, I mean, he still has 40 assists. He picked up his 40th assist. Now, people point to his plus minus and say that he's the worst. I think he's like, it's funny because Mark Scheifele was by far the best.
I thought we have a moratorium on plus minus, Dave.
We generally do.
Garrett Hole's not going to like hearing that stat.
I know. I understand, but I'm just saying that it will sometimes get thrown out at me in terms of, you know Scheifele's play this year. But it's interesting because Scheifele was by far the best guy collectively through the Jets organization. I think he was like a plus 80 something. Now he's in the plus 60s. But again, I understand plus minus is not the best stat. I'm just suggesting that I'm just going to try and reference it.
Well, you'd rather be on the positive side of the ledger, right? Like, you never want to be. And the thing is, that does match up with his expected goals against, right? Like, we know that,
that's right.
You know, that hasn't been a good number for him traditionally, but you're right. I mean, you know, going back to what you said about Kyle Connor taking on more of a leadership role, I think it's a good point that you make, because we've kind of seen a little bit of changing of the guard this year, right? Like, you've seen players like Connor and Dubois kind of become the team's, you know, most dependable players on a night in, night out basis. Not offensively. I'm not talking about just offensively. I'm just talking about overall, just their performance, right? Like, we know that Pierre-Luc Dubois, you know, he's been terrific on the power play, and he's a guy that can set up plays as well. But we know that he can impact the game in other ways, right? Like, physically, you know, he's a guy that we've seen him mix it up so many times this year, right? So I think when you talk about Kyle Connor, you know, I think especially on the power play, he's added an different element to his game. And, you know, that's obviously the defensive side of his game. But with 10 games left, and we know that, you know, the Jets most likely aren't going to make the playoffs, watching Kyle Connor go for 50 goals is going to be really exciting, not only for Jets fans, but just, you know, hockey fans in general.
Well, let's bring in someone who's up close and personal with that. We're going to bring Jamie Thomas of CJOB 680. He is also of Jets TV. Jamie, I can't believe this is the first time. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. As he told me, this is the first time we're ever having you
on. I'm blaming Drew, Jamie. It's not me. I book a lot of the guests, but I think Dave and I have talked about having you on for so many years now. I thought we'd had you on, so we'll blame it on Drew.
No, yeah, you're blame on the guy that books everybody. So it's just like, and I apologize, because you always think like, you're doing with these shows, and you have the Zoom option where you can blur things out. So I have my hole in the roof that you guys said you really want to get. I'm like, oh, it's no problem. I can blur it out the background, but nope, there's the hole in the background.
It's all good, Jamie. I've got, you know, water stains in my old River Heights basement on the roof and stuff like that. So it's all good.
Yeah, I tried to find a perfect spot in the house, because you guys know with kids, it's impossible to do anything when they're at home on Saturday. So I tried to find a lovely spot in the house. It just didn't work out.
That's okay. That's all right, Jamie. We'll, you know, I'm sure some folks in the chat might offer to come and help you fix your roof if you need it. So that won't be an issue, I'm sure.
I do need a guy that can. There's so much stuff that needs to be done in my house. So if there's anybody on here, like a contractor, please let me know, because as you guys know, we're so busy during hockey season. And my wife's like, the bathroom, the bathroom door downstairs. My in-laws are coming to visit in May, and my father-in-law is like super picky about the house. So I'm already freaking out about when he gets here on May 1st. I'm like 50 years old. I'm scared of my father-in-law. So
Jamie, I have an electrician in my family, my brother-in-law. So, you know, just let me know, and I can text you a number after the show.
Yeah, please do. I need a light up there. Or sorry, wrong side. That light. Yeah.
Jamie, I have a question. Did you come on here to talk about the Jets, or did you come on here to solicit, you know, some sort of contract? No,
it's homes on homes.
Yes. Painting too. I need somebody to paint the walls.
Well, I had College Pro stopped by my house yesterday, Jamie. So I believe you're in the neighborhood as well. So
are they reliable? That's what I need to know. Are they reliable?
They're college area kids, so you have to kind of take that with a grain of salt. But I believe I've never used them before. I know the game. They want, and those guys were to clean windows. But
I need you to do it first, though, so I can find out if they're any good. Then I can just, I need a recommendation. But anyways, we're going to talk about the Jets. I apologize.
That's okay. All good, Jamie. The Jets, you know, had an interesting game last night. That's something we wouldn't expect, right? A comeback against the Colorado Avalanche. Bit of a seesaw game. How did you see it from your perspective alongside our boy, Paulie Edmonds?
Well, I saw them playing with emotion and that never quit thing, right? And I think what we saw last night was a team that was down, but against a team like the Colorado Avalanche, even though they're minus Gabriel Landeskog and Nazem Kadri, still one of the best, well, the best team in the NHL. I just thought that never quit attitude, the relentless, they didn't get, the third period was their best, and Colorado's the best team in the NHL in the third period. I think they had 106 goals this year, and they had six in the two games the Jets played against them in Denver too. So little bit concerned when it went to the third period about that, but the way they played and took it to the Avalanche is the right way to take on the Avalanche. They stopped those passes through the neutral zone, through the seams. It was more direct. So what we saw last night, and I think it was important for the fans to see that, was that never quit. And it was an exciting game. So I think people left Canada Life Center happy with the result. Not so much the result, but what they saw. There was a lot of life in the Jets, even though the pulse in the playoffs isn't really there. So I think on a Friday night, that's what you want. You want to be entertained. You pay top dollar. That was a highly entertaining hockey game, and the Jets came on the wrong side of things, but a much better effort, in my opinion, than what we saw on Wednesday against the Detroit Red Wings.
I agree with you 100%, Jamie. And, you know, we said that on our post-game show last night. I mean, people know. I mean, everybody knows the 0.2%. I mean, I was kind of saying, like, you know, we're not being negative here. We're just being realistic. I mean, it's gonna take, you know, the Stars losing a bunch of games and the Jets essentially winning out to make the playoffs, right? So I agree with you. I think, you know, the fact that they tied the game up and forced it to overtime means more than actually getting that extra point. I know that kind of sounds a little bit weird because at this point in the season, you know, you want every single point that you can get. But I'm with you. I think, you know, the fans, the building was, I wasn't there, obviously, electric. But it was loud. We were watching it on the broadcast. Everyone could tell. I mean, that's what you want. You want your fans to leave happy, even if, you know, you don't get the extra point in overtime. And, you know, we wanted to ask you about, you know, Dylan Sandberg, right? Because it was, you know, we'll get your take here. But, you know, I think a lot of people were surprised. Not that he, you know, he's back up with the Jets, but maybe, you know, it was in place of Ville Heinola because we thought he might go into the lineup. But what did you think of, you know, Sandberg's game? He played, you know, about 12 and a half minutes on the third pair with Brendan Dillon. And do you think the expectation is for Sandberg to play the remaining 10 games with the Jets? Because we obviously know that he'll, you know, eventually go back to the Moose and, you know, help them out on their Calder Cup run.
Right. You know what, guys? If Dylan Sandberg hadn't got hurt, I think his stay with the Jets would have been a lot more extensive earlier in the season. What we've seen from him is a guy that's played enough games in the American Hockey League, the professional level, to understand what it's like, what you have to do, how to act like a pro. But I will say this, does not shy away. The Jets need that physical presence in front of the net. Listen, Ville Heinola is an outstanding young talent with an offensive pedigree with him, and there's no question about that. But when it comes to the hard minutes in front of the net, he's just not there yet. He's not strong enough yet. And that will come, but Dylan Sandberg gives you exactly that. And his first pass yesterday just does not panic with the puck. That part, I don't want to say surprises me. It was just a pleasant thing to see. It was like, wow, he looks so composed out there. He absolutely railroads Alex Newhook, takes the puck, wins the battle on the boards, gets the puck out of the zone. That's all you want from him. And I see a great penalty killer in the future with Dylan Sandberg. He's a big body. I think there's a little bit of a nasty side to him too that we haven't seen yet. So I think if you're the Winnipeg Jets, you, with these games coming up, for whatever reason this year, the Eastern Conference is the heavier conference. So it's something I never thought we'd ever see. I always thought it was that wide open, free flowing style. They've got a lot of heavy games coming up down the road here, and I think you're going to see a lot more than Dylan Sandberg. I don't know if it's going to be the full road down here, down the season, but I think we're going to get a lot of good looks at him right now while Logan Stanley works through his injuries. But I think anybody out there that knows the game had to have been impressed what we saw from Dylan Sandberg last night.
You know, and Jamie, from one defenseman to another, I mean, generally we don't give the save of the game award, but Josh Morrissey, of course, had the save of the game on MacKinnon with the empty net.
Yeah.
And last night, Dennis was talking about on the broadcast, I mean, I was in the building for the first two periods and, of course, home for the third.
I was listening to the game on radio, Jamie, by the way.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
I believe you, Ezra. I appreciate that. We love the minutes.
As he was given the support. But I was in the building. And, I mean, the one guy who I just continuously have been impressed with all season long, I mean, has been Josh Morrissey. And, yesterday he established a new career high in terms of points. I know it's not all about points, but, you know, of course, you do need production from your back end. What have you seen from Josh Morrissey, you know, obviously in a less emotional year than what he had to deal with last year, and how he's been able to bounce back and become a leader on it? We knew he was a leader already, but just reemerge as that leader for this one, Big Jets club.
Do you guys remember in 2018 during the Jets Stanley or the playoff run, we kept hearing from Paul Maurice as more media members started to flock to Winnipeg, and he started to re-explain about Josh Morrissey, what we kind of already knew already. It's just that he kept talking about that offensive side that we hadn't seen yet. He's got, there's an offensive side to Josh Morrissey that you're going to see later on. Well, we're starting to see that right now. And I saw a lot of urgency in Josh Morrissey's game last night. It's not easy to take Nathan MacKinnon one-on-one, and especially with an empty net, and stick out the toe and make the save. And then don't forget about when Francois cleared the puck, Morrissey knocked the puck out of the air too, with some great hand-eye coordination. But we're starting to see a kind of like, you can see, I don't want to say there's frustration, but you can see there's kind of a meaner side to Josh Morrissey. Like, you're starting to see him lay out guys. You're starting to see him chirp a lot. Not saying that part of his game wasn't there, but he's starting to assert himself a lot more in a physical presence in some ways. Blocking shots. There's a more physical part to his game now. His all-around game is getting better. And that's what the Jets saw when they drafted him, what they were talking about in 2018. And I think slowly but surely, he's probably going to become a bigger voice in the dressing room in terms of a presence and a leader, if is not there already. But I think it's been by far his best season as a pro in the National Hockey League with the Winnipeg Jets. And that you know, we're answering questions outside of the market. What's wrong with the Jets? And, you know, people may say, well, they're going to blow it up. There's no way they blow this up when you have the guys they do. This, you don't blow it up when you have Josh Morrissey. You don't blow it up when you have Nikolaj Ehlers. You have a very solid top six. You have a great third line center in Adam Lowry. There's just too many pieces here, guys, where you're like, oh, let's start all over again. That's ridiculous. It's just, you can't do it. It was such, I know everybody's frustrated, and they should be because of the expectations that were put on this hockey club. But there's just too many factors that we don't understand or that happened that made it impossible for them to gain any type of momentum to get going when they needed to. Paul Maurice stepping down in December, I think, had a bigger effect than a lot of people think, right? It's just, you don't see that very often in any sport. COVID has wreaked havoc with this team. The two here, the two there, Ehlers being gone for 19 games, Blake Wheeler getting hurt in November when he's starting to play his best hockey. There's just too many things where you're like, okay, that guy's done. It's impossible. It's too good of a team. They've drafted well. They've signed good players. The Manitoba Moose are having a great season this year. So that means your future is pretty good. So I get it. You are frustrated. And as a paying fan that has season seats and stuff, you want more. We all want more. And I'm sure the guys in the dressing room want more. Kevin Cheveldayoff wants more. Mark Chipman wants more. So I think we should just take a step back and breathe a little bit before we completely write off this hockey club.
I think a lot of time, you know, hockey fans, you know, Jets fans in this case, but hockey fans in general forget how random and, you know, out of a player or team's control outcomes can be, right? Like, I think everybody thinks that their team should, you know, every team is like, you know, the Detroit Red Wings, and they're going to make the playoffs every single, obviously I'm talking about, you know, not the last 4 or 5 years, but when they made the playoffs for 22 or 23 years in a row, everybody thinks their team's going to make the playoffs every single year, or their team's going to be, you know, one of the, you know, final four teams every single year. And as you mentioned, you can't control an injury to Nikolaj Ehlers at a crucial point of the season, or you can't control, like you said, when Blake Wheeler, you know, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Jamie, he was reunited with Scheifele and Connor then.
Yeah.
And Scheifele and Wheeler looked like, you know, it was, you know, the old 2017-18 Scheifele and Wheeler. I wanted to ask you about Mark Scheifele, because I was kind of laughing, you know, about it yesterday, because, you know, Wheeler, you know, he's out. We're not sure. I'm not sure if we have an update yet, if he's going to be available for, you know, the upcoming short road trip. But, you know, Scheifele just always seems to step up when Wheeler's out of the lineup or another player's out of the lineup. And, you know, he's on a 4-game point streak, had the 2 goals yesterday, 3 points. You know, he's been criticized at times. You know, we've criticized his defensive game at times as well. Nobody's taking anything away from him as a person or overall hockey player, but it seemed like, you know, yesterday he had a bit of a chip on his shoulder. He had a fantastic game yesterday.
Yeah, that the goal that made it 4-3 is, I think, the best we've seen, like in one moment, like the best goal he scored this year. And that's vintage Mark Scheifele. There was a full burst of speed through the neutral zone, took a guy on one-on-one, and he doesn't even allow Francois to set himself, right? And then just rips that shot off. That, I mean, that's what you get at elite Mark Scheifele. That's why it's so frustrating for everybody. And I'm sure it's frustrating for himself and the organization. That's a 100-point player there. You just don't come across 100-point centermen all the time. So I remember whenever Mark Scheifele was hurt, Blake Wheeler picked up the play, you know, right? And now it's vice versa right now. So you don't want to sit there and go, oh, I'll keep Blake Wheeler out of the lineup because Mark Scheifele picks it up. But I think we've seen yesterday where he took the team on his back, and we haven't seen that this year, in my opinion. And there's a lot of mitigating factors. I don't think, you know, he had the early edition of COVID, so we don't know how much that wreaked havoc on his system and his stamina. So I think that's part of what that slow start was. And then just, I think, I don't want to say it's confidence, but there was that confidence that I'm an elite player that we haven't seen this year last night when in that game. And to go up against the Avalanche and take a team on his back like Scheifele did, that provides hope. That's like, there it is. There's that spark that we see whenever Mark Scheifele is playing at his best. And that's why it's so mind-numbingly frustrating to see him not play at that level. You don't want to do it all the time because it's impossible, guys. Like, we travel with the team. It's grueling. I'm not going to lie. And I don't play the game. So, but I am 50. So maybe that's part of it too. So I'm not 29. I've got 3 young kids. They don't, a lot of guys don't, but it is pretty grueling.
I was going to say, that's what's really grueling is the 3 young kids, yes. not the 82 game set schedule, right, Jamie?
Yeah, it is. That's the truth. That's the real part of it. So you can understand the guys like Blake Wheeler and Paul Stastny, why they might be a little bit tired here and there because they come home and there they are, the youngsters waiting for them. But I think with Mark Scheifele, I get where everybody's coming from because we saw what he is last night. That's the best, one of the best centermen in the league that we haven't seen for too long. Now let's be flat out. Mm-hmm. That's what it constantly goes with. What's wrong with the Jets? Well, Mark Scheifele hasn't been the Mark Scheifele we've seen in years past. That was the Mark Scheifele that we need to see on a nightly basis.
Yeah, 100 point guys aren't just on every corner and every, you know, just pull them down from every tree. You don't just pick them up anywhere.
For another one. It's like,
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's not exactly anything that you can just randomly find. So, anyways, we're joined by Jamie Thomas, CJOB 680, also Jets TV. Looks like Jamie's got some company in his room. You can always bring him
my
on.
My dog is like, I can hear him chewing and stuff. So, he's like a year old. My kids like to leave me with the dog when they're doing stuff. So, obviously, they're doing something right now. They don't want the dog to bug them. So, they
brought the dog down
to you. What kind of puppy do you have, Jamie?
It's a Shepherd Lab cross, so the word is chewing. Like, it's just like he's chewing on my hand right now because he thinks I'm a chew toy. So it makes for interesting television. I'm sorry about that.
No, don't apologize. Jay Bell, the Winnipeg Free Press, brings his bird on when he does the show with us.
And we've had TV. That is entertainment. We're not journalists. We're entertainers, guys.
That's right. That's right. This is all a big show.
Jay Bell, because he actually writes
comics.
That's right.
So, Jamie, you know, we're talking about the Jets with you, of course, and one of the things that you mentioned, and something obviously I cover quite a bit, is the Manitoba Moose. Mm-hmm. And Mark Morrison talked about Dave Lowry actually talked about it a couple of just following practice, the importance of the winning culture they're creating down on the Moose. And then Mark Morrison, when we were talking to him in a post game, he said something about, you know, 2 playoff rounds will be like a season full of games for all of these Jets prospects. One thing I'm curious though about your thought is, do you think that we may see in these final 10 games, especially if something happens where the Jets get eliminated, not necessarily right away, but maybe especially when they go on that Florida, New York, Carolina, where things might become more crystal clear. Yeah. Do you think that there's a good chance we see guys like Johnny Kovacevic, Leon Gavanke? Leon Gavanke, of course, not waiver exempt next year. So you kind of want to see what you have in him, I think, at least that's my perspective, at the NHL level.
I'm not sure on that one. And the only reason why is I think that is because you're not going to sit Brendan Dillon. You're not going to sit Neil Pionk. You're not going to sit Josh Morrissey. So it would have to be an emergency recall where somebody is hurt, like Logan Stanley, I guess, in some ways. And maybe you do send Dylan Sandberg back. But I just I don't think the Jets really want to send Dylan Sandberg back right now. So until we see different, I would love to see Leon Gavanka. And the consistent message from Dave Lowry has been, we like to reward guys who have been good players in the American Hockey League. And I think that's the right attitude to have with your minor league affiliate, especially on the back. I'm not Sandy, I appreciate that. If I could get Tony over here, I'll get him over. So I appreciate that. I'll get him up here.
That's a great name for a dog. I'm a big fan of first names for dogs, like human names.
It's Tony Stark. That's his name. So it's
nice.
Our cat's name is Pepper Potts. So there's, you know, nice. Not that there's a love affair going on between the dog and the cat.
Yeah, what's going on there, Jamie?
Exactly. So hold on a second. Oh, sorry, buddy. What's your head? There he is right there.
Oh, there we go. Tony.
Still not cute. Still not a big fan of being licked in the face. So going back, maybe they do, but I think it has to be like injury situations, because I just don't see them sitting out the big guys, the veteran players, just to see what they have in Leon Gavanka and company. So it would be great to see him. He's earned that opportunity, because with Leon Gavanka, you have to be really proud of him. You know, talking with Craig Heisinger, that Leon worked hard on his fitness in the off season, took that seriously. And that's why I think we've seen, because of that, his game has taken to another level where the Jets knew he could get to if he got better in the physical department, in the fitness department. Yeah. So it's nice to see. When I imagine when you're Craig Heisinger, you're Mark Morris, and the players listen to what you're saying, and Eric Dubois, you should never leave him out. When they tell you to do something, there's a reason behind it. And when it works, I'm sure they give them the moment. With the same thing your parent would give you when they just look at "I told you," which is one of the more satisfying things in life. So I think maybe only if injuries, guys, I think we'll see Leon Gavanka, but I just don't see Dylan Sandberg going down here for a while.
Jamie, I wanted to ask you about Morgan Barron, because there's a lot of people that are pretty excited about Morgan Barron. He, of course, came over in the end as part of the Andrew Kopp trade. He's played four games. I think he was around 7 minutes. Played more in the Detroit game. I believe he was closer to 10 minutes. I'd have to check exactly what it was. But, you know, had a few scoring chances yesterday. He's a big guy, a good Halifax boy. Shout out to Rick Ralph, our former colleague at TSN 1290. What have your thoughts been on Morgan Barron? Because he's obviously a guy that you'd expect to stay up with the Jets for the last 10 games. But, of course, he can, also go down to the Moose and help them out once, they get into the playoffs and go on their Calder Cup run.
Well, what I see, you guys, is we have a theme here since the trade deadline. Is you bring in Mason Appleton, 6'3". You got in Zach Sanford, 6'4". You get a little bit more size at 6'3". Down the wings, Jets look to be getting bigger, obviously, is the theme here. And, clearly in a heavy division like the Central, and what we've seen in their struggles against the Eastern Conference, probably what this is. So Morgan Barron is a guy with size and some skill. And I know the New York Rangers liked him. There was no room for him. And what we've seen so far is exactly what I think the Jets were getting: a guy with size and skill, not afraid to take it to the front of the net, not afraid to stay in front of the net. A guy that's going to give you some solid fourth line minutes, and some maybe some time on the third line next season. Right. So it's what we've seen so far has been great. And apparently he's a great guy in the dressing room. Already has a relationship with Jeff Mellott. So they have a relationship going back to college. So there's some familiarity within the organization. I like what I've seen, guys. And anybody that's big and strong and wants to go to the net, has a little bit of skill, I think you take those guys anytime, anywhere.
Well, Jamie, we appreciate you joining us. You and Tony Stark. We
got to thank. Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
Shout out to Tony Stark for his appearance on.
You should see the carpet back here. Whoa, he's done some serious damage in like 2 minutes. So
Jamie, don't worry. Like I said, we've got a very diverse audience, and even if folks in the chat aren't able to do that, we do have
Jamie, a lot. We'll of get you some tennis balls for your birthday.
Yes,
I know. I'll bring them to the next game. But we also have people who download the podcast. So if anybody's listening and knows a good contractor or knows someone who can just simply put a roof tile
let
in,
these guys Jamie, know. To let me know.
Let us know.
Save my life.
And then we will get Jamie that information. Thanks very much, Jamie, for your.
I should have came on your show earlier if I had known this. You guys give me a contractor.
Exactly. We don't just talk hockey on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are multifaceted. We try and be as diverse as we can. So
anyways,
thanks, Jamie. We really appreciate it. Thanks very much. There he goes. That's Jamie Thomas of CJOB 680 and Jets TV. He does some great work with the Jets. And so we are going to head to our second commercial break on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I am your host, your temporary host, Dave Manuk. That's my boy over there, Ezra Ginsberg. And we will be back. A little more Jets talk. Then we're going to talk to Ian Mendez of The Athletic Ottawa. Talk about the Ottawa Senators, who the Jets are playing tomorrow night in our nation's capital.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest running comedy club, bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hi, Ez. Strange question for you. But why are you lying on the ground being crushed by a piano?
Well, Drew, I definitely tried to carry this baby grand piano down the stairs by myself, and somehow I failed miserably.
Right. Sorry, that was a silly question on my part. My apologies. Would you like me to call Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage to help you move the piano? They are the most experienced piano moving company in Winnipeg, after all.
Yes, please call Rolly's and hurry. This piano is very, very heavy.
Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage offers stress-free residential moving services while taking great care of your personal belongings, including your piano. At Rolly's, no job is too big or too small. For more information, visit Rolly's.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
Hey, it's Aaron from Bernstein's Deli.
That's right, Ezzy. I'm the guy who makes all your sandwich dreams come true.
So when you think Illegal Curve, what comes to you?
How about juicy chicken schnitzel, grilled salami, fried onions, melted cheddar cheese, and honey mustard on toasted thick-cut city rye bread?
Man, that's like the holy grail of sandwiches.
And so it shall be known as the Illegal Curve Sandwich.
The Illegal Curve Sandwich. Try it today at Bernstein's Deli. Find us at Corridon and Lanark or online at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile.
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whiten my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go,
we have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard.
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see lindenmarketdental.com.
So you're a pizza person, you married a wing person, but somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal. Starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I am Dave Manuk. That is Ezra Ginsberg. Saturday morning, we're more than halfway done the program. Tons of Jets talk. We've got a little more Jets talk for you. And then in about 10 minutes, we're going to be joined by Ian Mendez of The Athletic Ottawa to talk about the Ottawa Senators. They're the Jets' next opponent. They've got.
And there's a lot to talk about, let me tell you.
I was going to say, there's a lot to talk about with the Ottawa Senators. But we're gonna have 10 more minutes of Jets talk here before we get Ian on the program. You know, as one thing we've talked about, and like I referenced earlier in the show briefly, was this idea that the Jets have left a lot of points on the board. And it really is, like I said, Scott Billick of the Winnipeg Sun wrote an article on I believe it was April 1st. It wasn't April Fool's, unfortunately, for Jets fans. But I just couldn't get over it. Like I said, it feels like it's something we've talked about consistently throughout the course of the year. But Scott laid it out, right? There was a loss against the Sharks early in the season. You know, that was an OT loss, but still it was a point loss. There was that Pittsburgh game where the Jets basically stunk the bed early in November. They lost it. Arizona. Nobody forgets that game. That was that 46-save masterpiece from your boy, Karel. I can't even pronounce his last name.
Vemelka.
Yeah, Vemelka. That's it. There we go. That was the 1-0 loss end of November. Buffalo. Who forgets that game? December 14th, 4-2 loss. You know, I mean, it's the Canucks. Remember the Canucks coming in here in January, beating the Jets 5-1? Or maybe they didn't come in here. I think that was maybe in Vancouver. I can't remember. No. Who was that here? I don't remember. Senators, 5-2. That was more reasonable. Recent. And of course, blowing the 3-0 lead and losing to the Colorado Avalanche. And unfortunately for the Jets, that's kind of been the story of the season. And that was just six that Scott listed off. There's been a lot more, obviously, because otherwise the Jets would have quite a few more points as opposed to L's. And I think that's going to be the story. The story of the season is there's a lot of changes this Jets team needs to make structurally. They just Craig Button went off on the, what was it, the trade deadline when Craig Button went off and talked about how the Jets are just a mess structurally and they just have to get better. I mean, remember, it's funny, right? We always talk about the Jets and the Moose run the same systems. Well, what's going on here? The Jets and the Moose run the same systems. The Moose seem to run it a lot better, right? And it's funny, just to kind of disabuse that notion, you know, Eric Dubois, when we talked to him, talked about the way the Jets PK, the Moose PK, sorry, was slightly different than the Jets, a little bit more aggressive, changed things up a little bit. So, you know, there's a lot of homework that's going to have to be done because this isn't just on players. The Jets have a lot of talent. That's not a question, right? We've talked about the Jets top six. I mean, obviously, Paul Stastny's had a great year. We've talked about Kyle Connor, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois, Mark Scheifele, even though he hasn't been, you know, the Mark Scheifele you expect, but offensively still been able to produce. So they're still producing. There's, you know, you need to augment this roster. You've got some young guys coming up. Defensively, you just need to be a better team. Connor Hellebuyck can't be a Vezina goaltender every single night. And, you know, the Jets relied on that, you know, in the past. But there's some structural changes that this Jets team is going to need to make this summer because there's just too many nights. And like I said, Scott listed off six. We could probably list off 15 games this season where the Jets should have had points in games and instead went out with them.
Right. And, you know, to me, that's because this team had much higher expectations than some of the other teams around you that are just outside the playoff picture, right? Like the Vancouver Canucks, for example. The Canucks didn't have high expectations this year. The Dallas Stars, you know, they should end up taking that second wild card spot, but, you know, there weren't really high expectations. I'm not saying that, you know, the Dallas Stars organization and their fans didn't expect to make the playoffs. I'm saying, you know, they didn't expect to, you know, be a Stanley Cup contender. And that's what, you know, the Jets were considered at the beginning of the season by bringing back Paul Stastny, by bringing in, you know, veteran defenseman Nate Schmidt and Brendan Dillon. And with all of the, you know, the high-powered offense they have with, as you mentioned, Connor and Ehlers, Scheifele, Dubois. So, I mean, it's been a huge disappointment. And when you talk about, you know, whether it's the points that the Jets didn't earn in overtime or the shootout, or, you know, points that they gave up or didn't earn, I should say, against teams much below them in the standings. Like, you know, we just saw it with Detroit. I mean, we saw it a few weeks ago against the Ottawa Senators, right? Like, if you don't think that the Jets want to avenge that loss, I mean, you're mistaken. I'm not saying that the Jets don't go into every game with the intention of winning it, but I mean, that was a very embarrassing game against the Senators a couple of weeks back. That was the 24th of March. So, I mean, yeah, there's no shortage of games. You know, you mentioned some of them, Dave, but I mean, like, that is just a team, you know, to me, that really hasn't found their way the entire year, right? Like, we've seen, you know, how many times Kenny Weeb, I was listening to Winnipeg Sports Talk yesterday, Huss and Weber, you know, talking about this, and Weber made a good point. He was saying, like, you know, for basically, you know, the much of the second half of the season, we've been waiting for the Jets to turn that corner and, you know, turn a 2-game winning streak into a 3-game winning streak, 4-game winning streak, 5-game winning streak. That's what good teams do, right? Good teams win 5-6 games in a row at least once, but preferably a couple times, you know, during a season, right? And we just haven't seen that, you know, as of late. Earlier in the season, I think the Jets picked up, like, what was it, 8 of 10 points? Eight of 10 games they picked up points, right? But really, we haven't seen that since that, what was it, a 9-3-3 start that we've talked about a lot. Since then, the Jets have been a below 500 team, right? So, yeah, it's been disappointing, and especially the games that the Jets have lost to some of those quote-unquote, you know, bottom 10 teams like the Red Wings, Senators, Sabres, Coyotes, everything like that. But going back to what you were saying about, you know, the changes in structurally, systems, everything like that, you know, I do think that, you know, coaching, I agree with Craig Button, and we had him on, you know, when you were in Hawaii, you know, that was a couple of weeks ago. But I do think that, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, it's going to be a complete overhaul, Dave, but I think that, you know, there's a good chance that you will see a new head coach. I'm not sure who that's going to be. And I think, you know, Dave Lowry, you know, even though you could say, you know, you can say anything you want, I mean, I do think he was put into a tough position because I don't think you know, anybody thought that was how it was going to go down. And I'm not using that as an excuse. I'm just saying that, you know, it's just not something that we saw necessarily at that point in the season, like Paul Maurice resigning. We thought, if anything, you know, he would be fired by the Jets and possibly someone from outside the organization would come in. So I think it starts with coaching. And, you know, I agree with you, what some others are saying, like, could it, is Kevin Cheveldayoff's jeopardy it, job in jeopardy? Only, you know, Mark Chipman and the ownership group really knows that, right? So we can speculate all we want. We just don't know. But for me, it's more about bringing in an established NHL head coach and possibly other support, the other supporting cast around him, right? So I'm not going to, you know, name names, but I mean, it's possible that you have an entire new coaching staff, including assistants next year. Maybe not. Maybe it's just a new head coach and Jamie Compan and Charlie Huddy keep their jobs. I'm not sure. But I do think, you know, you have to look long and hard at bringing in a new head coach at the very least, and possibly a whole new group.
Well, and I think the reality is you can make all the excuses you want, right? But Calgary and St. Louis dealt with COVID. I mean, Ottawa too. We're going to be talking about with Ian Mendes coming up, but I mean, teams have dealt with COVID. So you can't use COVID as an excuse. I'm sorry. It just doesn't work like that. The Calgary Flames had more guys lost. They're playing games with like 17 guys, like, you know, 17, like it was unbelievable. And yet St. Louis Blues too, because of the cap situation. And because remember early on the league wasn't allowing the taxi. So as a result, what did you end up having? You had teams that had to play within the cap structure, but they couldn't assign guys because of the COVID. So St. Louis Blues, the Calgary Flames, teams deal with it. And I agree with some of the comments. You know, you want to make excuses. Every single team can make an excuse. Every single team has justifications for the reasons why things have fallen off the rails, if you will. So it's all well and good, but every other team can probably point to something, you know, and we don't know because we don't focus on those teams the way we focus on the Winnipeg Jets here in Winnipeg. But like I said, I mean, we know about the Flames. We know about the Blues because they were so significant. But I guarantee if you go through
I was going to say, look at the Tampa Bay Lightning, for example. What did Nikita Kucherov miss, 35 games or 40 games at the beginning of the season?
Right.
Yeah. Right. How was Tampa doing? They were doing fine. And maybe Tampa's a bad example because they're two-time defending champions. You know, so you're saying, oh, you're picking one of the best teams in the league. Well, you just mentioned Calgary, right? Look at the Maple Leafs. The Maple Leafs have been dealing like their goaltending situation. I mean, Mrazek is out.
They went to their four-string goalie.
Well, yeah, like so, you know, and you've had Jake Muzzin out of the lineup. He's back now, but you've had a bunch of injuries there. Yeah, and you know they keep humming along, right? So,
Well, I mean, and as you pointed out, the Manitoba Moose have lost so many guys, and they just keep chugging along. So you can continue to win if you follow a basic structure. If you have a basic tenant of your team. And I just don't think that has been followed or created sufficiently to get the best out of these players. And you're right. It's going to take, there's going to be some serious soul searching about from the ownership, from the management, from the coaching staff, and whether it looks the same, we don't have any voice in that happening. You know, I know folks are hoping, but that's just not the reality. So let's move our talk from solely focused on the Winnipeg Jets. We're going to bring in Ian Mendes of The Athletic. He's going to talk to us about the Ottawa Senators in our nation's capital. Hello, Ian. How are you? And welcome to the Illegal Curve.
We brought in the ace.
That's right. Out of the bullpen. Here comes the ace. Guys, how's it going?
We're good.
Great. How are you?
Okay. Fantastic. Always great to when Ezra reached out. I'm always happy to be on with you guys. So I appreciate you reaching out and looking forward to chatting some sense with you.
Well, there's a lot to chat about the Ottawa Senators. They, you know, there's a lot of positive, some negative, but you know, one of the things I saw over the weekend when they had Tkachuk have that young fan show up at the game, and I just, you know, like it's those kind of stories, Ian. I know some people say they're hokey and they're intentionally meant to pull at your heartstrings. I think you're a little too jaded if you can't get excited about a little kid writing a letter to a hockey player, and you know, Brady Tkachuk. You know, I mean, obviously it got to him through, I'm assuming you'll tell us the story, but through the Senators staff. And for folks who don't know, a little girl in Ottawa wrote a letter. It got, you know, built up some snowball effect on social media. And eventually she got a chance to meet Brady Tkachuk. But what a great story in Ottawa with that one.
Yeah. And you know what? Here's the thing. And you got, listen, the Tkachuk family has those deep roots in Winnipeg, right? So yeah. I think your community should take a lot of credit for the kind of the values that I think that this family has. And you can see it in Brady and you see it all the time. And this is funny because just last week, Brady Tkachuk, after playing an afternoon game against the Red Wings, another story that went viral with him with kids was he gets home and there's a bunch of kids playing street hockey, like road hockey on his street. He gets out and he plays with them, like in his suit.
That was just awesome.
Yeah. And so then a couple days later, here he is connecting with this 9-year-old girl who just wrote him a letter as part of a, I think their class project. She was in grade 3 or 4, and then a class project. Hey, you have to write a letter to a hero of yours and actually like mail it off. And she wrote a handwritten letter to Brady Tkachuk saying, I play hockey. You're my favorite player to watch. We love watching you. We're coming to our first game. And, you know, Brady gets this letter. He not only writes the girl a letter back, he meets with her. He gives her an autograph. He look, you can't fake this type of you can't fake it. Like you, you're either a good human being or you're not. And you can't fake the type of things that Brady Tkachuk does. And for an organization like Ottawa that in the last 5 years, I think that's been one of the things that's been missing, right? It's been this crater, this void where there's no connection between the team and the fan base. Well, it's back now and it's starting to come back. And Brady Tkachuk's a big part of that.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I mean, it does pull at the heartstrings. And, you know, even though, you know, people like us are breaking down every single expected goal and every single, all the minutiae, or as I like to say, the minutiae of hockey, really, that's what it's all about, right? Like, that's the type of stuff where you're like, yeah, the hockey players, for the most part, 99.9% of them are good human beings. And as you are as well, that's why we brought you on, Ian. And, you know, saw the mailbag and the Athletic. And, you know, before the show, Dave and I were talking about, like, there's so much to talk about with this Senators team, because I think you'd agree, like, this Senators team is on the cusp of really turning a corner and getting back into the playoffs. And, you know, we want to ask you about Jake Sanderson as well, who signed recently playing for University of North Dakota. Like, this guy is an absolute beast, right? Like, you've seen the comparisons to Cale Makar, and like, this is going to be a stud defenseman for the Senators. I wanted to start off, though, obviously, tragedy with Eugene Melnyk passing away, and, you know, condolences to his family and friends. And, you know, there a lot of talk, you know, you mentioned this in the mailbag, like talk about Daniel Alfredsson potentially being involved. Can you just give us an update at kind of where we're at? I don't know, you know, how close, you know, we are to hearing any news, but like, where are we kind of at just, you know, kind of, you know, in the aftermath of Eugene Melnyk, Senators owner, passing away?
Yeah, and listen, it's only been not even 2 weeks, right? So there is still a lot that has to happen here from a perspective of, you know, just legally what happens with his estate, red tape with the NHL, you know, the ownership of the team. Look, there's a lot of factors. So it's really hard for me to give you a timeline for, like, I'd love to tell people, hey, by June 1st, there's going to be some clarity here. I don't know that. I don't even know if September 1st, we're going to have clarity. But I think what I do feel comfortable saying is that I think we're headed into a more positive era around this hockey team. And it's unfortunate. Look, I think there was a lot of people who maybe wanted to see a change in ownership, but I'd like to think that nobody wanted to see it this way. Like, this is not the way that you'd want to see an ownership of a hockey team or a professional sports entity change hands. As much as people may have had some disdain for the owner here, excuse me, I just don't think that is the outcome that you wanted. But he had a very complicated legacy here. Yes, he saved the team, and I think that there's, you know, significant reason to celebrate him for that. But simultaneously, I think there were some elements of his ownership that cast a dark shadow over this team in the way that he maybe alienated some star players, and then in turn, I think you alienate fans and business partners and politicians, and there's a whole bunch of, you know, fractured relationships along the way. And so what I do feel comfortable in saying is that, yeah, I think a lot of that hopefully is going to be in the rearview mirror. And whether it's his family, he's got two daughters that are in their early 20s, and I don't know that they're A, interested, and B, kind of, you know, equipped to run a business, right? So we'll see where this goes, but I can tell you there's a lot of interested parties. And as Daniel Alfredsson has mentioned, some of these interested parties have reached out to him.
You know, Ian, as he preempted it a little bit in the start of his question to you about Jake Sanderson, and I had someone who covers UND say he was one of the best players he's ever watched play, you know, in Grand Forks. And that's a high compliment given all the players that have come through that well-regarded program. But just how much excitement is there for the fifth overall pick in 2020? I know the Jets would have loved to have the Montana product fall to them. But how much excitement is there in Ottawa to have him wearing a Senators jersey soon?
Yeah, a ton of excitement for Jake Sanderson. And, you know, I had a chance to go down to Grand Forks and watch him play in November and had a good conversation with him, had a good conversation with his head coach, Brad Berry. And the thing that struck me when I talked to Brad Berry, and you talk about the great lineage, Dave, of players that have played at UND, that's exactly what Brad Berry pointed out to me. He said, look, he is the equivalent of, you know, Jonathan Toews, TJ Oshie, he called him a one percenter. He's like, you know what? We have lots of great players that come through the program, but there's 1% of them that are just in a different stratosphere. Jake was in that stratosphere. So I think you should be pretty excited if you're an Ottawa fan to see him. It's unfortunate. He sustained a wrist injury that required surgery. So it knocked him out of the Frozen Four tournament for UND. There hopefully plays a game or two. It doesn't matter for his entry-level contract, whether he plays a game or not. Based on his age, a year burns off anyway, but it'd be really fun to see him play a game or two. But the feeling is he's going to step in next season, guys, play a top four role here. You know, he's got Thomas Chabot here, so I think that'll help ease some of it. Like, I think when Cale Makar went to the Avs, like he was the guy, right? Like, he was all of the offense revolved around him and whatever. And I even feel that way a little bit with Mo Sider in Detroit. Like, he's the guy. Sanderson has the benefit of Thomas Chabot is here, and Chabot can eat a lot of those minutes and let him kind of slowly grow into the game. But there is a ton of excitement for Jake Sanderson here.
Ian, you know, I can't believe that we've gone this far into the interview and we haven't talked about Timmy Stützle and Brendan Gallagher. We might have to go long with you, because I mean, I have to ask you about Josh Norris, not Morris. Or if Dave maybe will ask about Norris, because he's been phenomenal. I think, you know, he might be one of the more underrated players. And I think there is definitely a connection to Winnipeg, you know, University of Michigan, you know, first round pick. Connor was 17, Norris was 19. I just don't know if enough people realize how good Norris is. I think you know, and a lot of Senators fans, but just going back to Brendan Gallagher and Tim Stützle, I mean, I didn't take it too seriously. Timmy Stützle obviously is going to be a huge part. Well, he's currently a big part of the Senators, but going forward, I mean, the sky's the limit. I think you'd agree. But what were your overall reactions to Gallagher's comments? I mean, I'm sure that you saw on social media immediately after Gallagher made those comments, somebody put together a highlight package of him diving, right? So there was a lot of people defending Timmy Stützle. But like I said, I mean, I'm obviously laughing now, but I didn't take the whole thing seriously, because Gallagher is obviously the heart and soul of the Canadians, and Stützle is such a talented player. But what was your kind of take on that whole kind of back and forth?
Yeah, I don't know where you guys come down on this. I'm always hesitant to criticize NHL players when they have a colorful quote or comment, because we also simultaneously complain about, I wish NHL players would speak out more often. Then when they speak out, we're like, that guy's not classy. Well, guess what? We can't have it both ways. So either we want these juicy sound bites or we don't. So put me in the camp if I want them. Okay. Now let's have some fun with this. And look, Brendan Gallagher delivered an absolute tongue lashing of Timmy Stützle, right? Like, and you could look at his face. There was disdain in his voice, and he looked angry, and he basically accused him of diving and said, look, if this was, I don't know what he said. He said, you know, he's in more than half the games that we've played. Mm-hmm. He's gone down, and then he pops right up and he's on the first unit power play. The only thing that's there, and look, and yes, does Tim Stützle draws a ton of penalties. In fact, this year in terms of penalty differential, only Connor McDavid has drawn more penalties than Tim Stützle. So that's a remarkable stat, right? The thing is, Stützle on that play went knee on knee with Suzuki. Okay. And if you look at it, it did look catastrophic. Like, it looked like, oh my God, like that's like an MCL ace. Like, you know, you see that all the time. Guys go knee on knee, sometimes has catastrophic results. But he got up and he played on that power play. So that irritated Gallagher, and Joel Edmondson too in that game was poking at Stützle right after. Okay. But here's the interesting part of all this. Stützle has now missed the last two games for Ottawa. So how does everybody feel now?
Yes, not a good look for Gallagher.
No, I mean, and you're right, Ian, and you're 100% right in the sense that we always complain like players have the most formulaic answers, and when they actually give you something good, then they get criticized for it. So I'm in the camp of let these guys talk, let them not be automatons. Let's actually hear something interesting, and then we have something to discuss in the media, because otherwise you're getting very, you know, whitewashed comments, and they're not nearly as exciting, and not, you know, they don't have to be clickbaity, but they can be interesting and they can create dialogue.
We just got to chip more pucks in, get behind their D, get more pucks on net.
Yeah. Pucks in deep and play a full 60 minutes. And the worst is when you hear somebody talk about gap control. That's when I zone out. Like gap control, like whatever.
Yeah. Is that like controlling yourself at the gap that you don't spend too much money? Is that what that means?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you can usually control the place I would have a harder time with would be Banana Republic, right? Because that's like,
oh yeah,
Banana Republic.
They have good
here,
stuff there.
Then the Gap, and then Old Navy, right? Is that how it works?
I would think that's a fair assessment. Yeah, that's
hierarchy.
It.
Yeah,
yeah. I think that's fair. Now, and I wonder, you know, Ian, I want to ask you. We're joined by Ian Mendez of The Athletic, talking about the Ottawa Senators. Jets are going to be into Ottawa tomorrow night to play the Sens in the nation's capital. Should be a barn burner. But, you know, Ian, I'm curious about, speaking of barns, what's going on with the arena talk in Ottawa? Because, I mean, we're not in it like you are, so we don't know. And you hear certain things. But, again, like I said, our focus is on the Winnipeg Jets. So what's going on with and I would imagine, obviously, with the unfortunate passing of Eugene Melnyk, that's going to maybe potentially throw a wrench in that situation. But what is the latest in Ottawa and their quest to move the arena downtown?
Yeah, so you're exactly right. It is tied to ownership because – Obviously, whoever's controlling the team would have to, you know, enter into some sort of agreement to move the team downtown. Now, our belief is that before he passed away, that Eugene Melnyk and the Ottawa Senators did in fact put in a bid. So there's this parcel of land downtown in Ottawa. So if people know where Parliament Hill is, it's about a 2-3 minute drive west from Parliament Hill. So it's right smack downtown. The Senators put a bid in on this at the end of February. We'll probably know in about 6 weeks whether or not they were successful. But there are other groups that might be interested in procuring that land and building an NHL arena. So there's a lot of balls in the air. But I'll say this. This is probably the most confident people have felt about the Senators playing downtown. They should have had this arena done. In fact, they should have been playing this season in the arena. But the entire process crumbled. It ended up with lawsuits, and it got super messy. But now the feeling is that maybe that this can get done. And I still think we're probably 4 to 5 years away from it, but there's more optimism today than at any point in the last 3 years that they're going to be playing downtown. Just people have to be patient.
That's great news to hear, because I know the criticism. I've been to the arena in Kanata a few times, and I know that's kind of the running joke and everything like that, even though Senators fans are fantastic hockey fans. So it's nothing to do with the fans. It's just, I know that the location of the arena has been a hot topic for, I mean, how many years, right? Like, we're talking about that for a couple of decades now. Mentioned Josh Norris earlier, Ian, like I gotta bring him up. Like, been a fan of his game. We mentioned, you know, we have no shortage of players from Michigan and the University of Michigan, even though Andrew Kopp was traded recently. But, you know, if Norris was healthy the whole year, we're talking about, you know, I don't know, 40 goals easy, you know, close to 50 goals. Like, we saw him, you know, just the other couple of weeks ago in the Sens 5-2 win over the Jets. But I believe he's on a 7 or 8 game point streak right now. Had a hat trick the other night against the Red Wings. Like, I guess just how would you assess Norris, who's obviously having a career year and just seems to, you know, find himself on the score sheet every single night?
Well, and the most intriguing thing about Josh Norris, guys, is that he's due for a new contract. Like, this is last year of his entry-level deal. And, you know, when you put yourself in this spot and you look at goals per game and you look at power play goals, like, he's top 5 or 6 in the league in those categories. Like if you prorate his goals per game, I think he would be, you know, up there with the Kyle Connors and the, you know, in the 40-45 range to end the season. Power play goals, I think he's 3rd in the league in power play goals, and he missed 15 games. And look, this is a breakout season, and it's going to be fascinating. What kind of contract does he get? Do they bridge him to see if this was an aberration? Do they lock him in because they know what he is? He's great. And you know, it's funny you bring up Kyle Connor, because that's the guy I feel like who doesn't get enough love league-wide. I don't think enough people realize how good Kyle Connor is. And maybe Josh Norris is that next guy that will hit the 40-goal mark and people will be like, oh, yeah, that guy's pretty good. And I think, for me, he's established himself as a legitimate number one. He's a guy that can clearly click with Brady Tkachuk. And now you've got the foundation here for a legitimate top line in Ottawa for the next, you know, 6 or 7 years.
You know, Ian, one of the things we do is focus a lot on the Manitoba Moose here in Winnipeg. And Belleville is a team we see quite often because, of course, they're the, even though they're in the east of the AHL, they do come through and play the other Canadian teams. But who are the guys maybe on Belleville or, you know, in college, who are the next kind of rung of guys? Obviously, we've already talked about Jake Sanderson, but who are those next rung of guys that the Senators fans are really keyed in on, the probably next 2-3 gut prospects that are maybe ready to take that next step and jump into the NHL, and folks are really excited about there in Ottawa?
Yeah, and so it's a really good question, right? Because they've been so bad for so long that they've stockpiled a pretty good arsenal of players. So the next wave, one guy that actually, I think he only has, well, he's got fewer than 20 games of NHL experience under his belt, but I'd put him in this category of unknown, as Shane Pinto. Mm-hmm. And he's missed the majority of this season with a shoulder injury. But I think if you ask Ottawa fans, like, who's the guy who's not in the lineup right now that you're most excited about? And, you know, again, we won't include Sanderson. I think Pinto is that guy. And he is, I got to say, he is so responsible for a young centerman. So he would be one. Ridley Gregg, who maybe mm-hmm. some fans are familiar with because of his work in the Western Hockey League, is another guy that I think wouldn't shock me if he gets NHL games next year. And Ridley, I'm trying to think what would be the best word to describe his game, but it's got that sandpaper element. I think he's going to be a perfect fourth line, third line guy for this team. He's real, like, he's a guy that I actually think they thought about keeping him this year. Like, I think they had the conversation of, damn, should we keep Ridley Gregg here to start the season? And I think he's going to fit in really well here. And then the other guy that's really interesting, and I'm rocking my Ottawa 67s hat here, not because I'm a fan of the 67s, but I'm having a terrible hair day. So when Ezra said, you're on camera, I'm like, oh, I got to throw a hat on. But it's funny because Tyler Boucher, who was their first-round pick last year, is now playing for the 67s. And I think he's a little bit more of a project. And I feel really bad for the kid because he got taken 10th overall. And for a lot of people, he wasn't on a lot of those, you know, when you read the consensus lists of the, you know, the Craig mm-hmm. Buttons and the Corey Pronmans and the, you know, whoever you Sam Cosentino, like whoever is your draft person, Tyler Boucher probably wasn't in the top 10. And so the young man took a ton of heat from the fans. And like imagine your life, childhood dream is realized and people are mad. Like, how is it this kid's fault? Like, exactly. So I'd like to see him get an opportunity here. I think he's going to be a really fun player to watch again, kind of in the Ridley Gregg mold of he's got sandpaper. He's got a little bit of offensive flair, but again, probably 2 years away from really making an impact at the NHL level.
I think you make a really good point about the draft, right, Ian? Because it doesn't, after the draft is over, and this is something that we know isn't the case, but where a guy is drafted will always be attached to that person. It's kind of like your grades in high school is the way I look at it, right? Like, who cares what grades you had in high school? It's what you do after high school, whether that's going to university or working or whatever, the type of person you are and everything like that. So I agree with you. I mean, I don't know why, and nobody should be, if you're a 10th overall pick, there's a reason. That means that a team's amateur scouting staff, you know, valued you that high. And we see it every year, right? Like, we see guys that are late first round picks that you see those, it comes out in The Athletic. I know if we were to redo the 2015 draft, well, I think Kyle Connor is probably a top 10 pick, maybe, you know, maybe top even five. Higher top five pick probably. Yeah. Right. And Boston had three cracks at him. We all know that. Right. So we have so much to ask you about, but we're going to let you go on this last question because see, you have here, you have a cough as well. So I'm sure you're going to be drinking lots of water for the rest of this morning, this afternoon. But I wanted to ask you about Matthew Joseph, right? Because Nick Paul gets traded to the Lightning. We knew that, you know, Nick Paul was on the trade deadline boards and everything like that. But Joseph's got 11 points, I think 3 goals, 8 assists in 7 or 8 games, you know, with the Senators. This is the guy drafted by Tampa Bay, played 4 or 5 years with Tampa Bay, but like obviously he's putting up the point totals, but you know, for a guy, you know, not a younger prospect, not a prospect maybe even at all at 25 years old, but is, do you see him as just like kind of fitting in nicely kind of in that Senators bottom six? Jets fans are obviously going to see him tomorrow night against Ottawa.
Well, I'll tell you what, you're not going to see him in the bottom six. You're going to see him on the top line. And that's where he's been playing. He's been playing with Tkachuk and Norris, and he's got 10 points in his last 4 games. 10 points in 4 games. Like, I think for me, when I look at Matthew Joseph, this was the perfect guy. These are the types of players Ottawa fans have been screaming at management to get. Go and find players who are under team control, but are on like kind of these cap strapped teams that they're like Matthew Joseph needs a new contract this summer. Tampa wasn't likely going to be able to fit him in on a new deal. So they had almost had to get rid of him too. But if you look at Tampa and you see the collection of forwards, he was never going to get a chance to even sniff the top six. He was having a hard time playing top 9 minutes there, right? Now you come to Ottawa and we're going to put you on the top line just to see. And it's clicked. It's just clicked right away. And I love it because he told us yesterday, after the game on Thursday, he says, you know what? I can work on this line because my speed can be the disruptor. And it's true. You know, Brady Tkachuk plays with a little bit of sandpaper. Norris has that great release, but Joseph brings the speed. So you'll see that tomorrow night. It's a fun line to watch. They've been clicking on all cylinders, and this guy might be playing top 6 minutes for Ottawa here for the next little bit.
Well, we appreciate the insight, Ian Mendez from The Athletic in Ottawa. He's the guy that you want to get insight from, and the Jets are going to need all that insight because they've got a big game, and not necessarily a relevant game, but it'll be a fun game as they kick off a 2-game road trip.
Thanks for powering through as well, Ian. I was on our post-game show, I was feeling a little bit sick yesterday, so appreciate you powering through the little tickle in your throat there.
Listen, I had COVID, this is just the end of COVID. Like, I had it. I'm 100% have the thing. It's just that little tickle of a cough that when you go to speak for 20 minutes in a row, that's when it flares.
I don't know about your you know, circle of friends and families and colleagues, but here in Winnipeg, it seems like everybody knows somebody. Yeah. Like, COVID is just, everybody's got COVID. Everybody knows someone that's got COVID. So it's just, it's never going away, apparently.
It's unbelievable. Like, the last 3 weeks, I've known more people who've had it than I had at any point during the 2 years.
It's unbelievable.
Of the pandemic. And you know what? And it wasn't fun when I had it. It was 2 days of bad symptoms, but now I'm 11 days clear of it. But still, as you guys could see and hear, it's still affecting my voice here a little bit.
Well, we appreciate you powering through, Ian, for us. And thanks a lot for joining us this morning and providing that perspective of the Ottawa Senators. We always appreciate your appearances here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Oh, yeah. Of course, guys. Anytime for you. Have a great day.
Okay, cheers, Ian. Thanks. There goes Ian. We're going to head to our final commercial break of the show. And then Ezzy and I will come back with some final thoughts on a fun, fact-filled 2-hour Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are, you know, Ezzy, 2 hours flies by when you're having fun. You and I are rolling along this Saturday morning.
Sorry, Dave, my headphones are a little issue there. So I'm going to have to maybe get them fixed, or maybe it might be time for a new pair of headphones. I've had these ones for a while, but a little bit broken right now. I have to get out the duct tape.
Seemingly to the untrained eye. So, as you know, another great Saturday morning talking Jets. We appreciate everybody joining us this morning. No, we're not talking. T. Konopoli, he says no draft talk yet. We're not going to be talking draft quite yet. That, trust me, we are going to have a long summer of shows. We won't have any post-game shows of the Jets variety. I'm not promising we won't have some Moose type of things. And speaking of the Moose, you know how much I love to segue. I'm not going to do a Manuk Moose Minute. I did a long enough one yesterday. And as he pointed out during the break, I kind of did one this morning to start the show, but I did get a text from someone who worked for the Moose who told me that, because as of yesterday, it was 3 points for the Moose to clinch a playoff spot. And of course they got thumped by Milwaukee last night, but they were 3 points away. But now I'm reliably told that it's actually just 1 point that they need to clinch a playoff spot, because
they'll clinch tonight.
Well, yeah, and well, Chicago's not exactly an easy team, but because Iowa and Texas,
the Moose got this. Moose are going to win. Ginsburg guaranteed the Moose win tonight.
Wow. Okay.
Put it on the board.
Wow. Well, wait a second. Doesn't that mean the Moose are going to get pumped tonight? No, but the Ginsburg guarantee usually hit the opposite.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So anyways, what?
So I guarantee the Wolves win then.
There you go. That's well. The problem is you've already given the guarantee though. So now it's like, are you giving two guarantees?
You can't return an item for spite.
Is the game going to get canceled? Because that's kind of where I'm going with that now, based on your kind of double guarantee there. But
I doubled down.
You did. So the point is, the Moose are going to have a chance to clinch today. Punch their ticket to the postseason. So we'll see if they're able to do that. I was imagining Mikael Burton will be back in net. So that's going to be good for him. And he's, like I said, he played much better the last couple of games. So that's a good thing for the Moose. And they'll have a chance to clinch against Chicago tonight, against their division rival, the top team in the division right now. So that'll be in their division, at least. And that'll be important. And then they're back home and they'll play Rockford. We may have some tickets. We'll give them away. Of course, we're going to be back here. Potentially, we know at least I'll be back here. I think Ezzy's going to be back here tomorrow night as well. We've got an Illegal Curve post-game show happening tomorrow night. Then we've also got an Illegal Curve post-game show happening Monday night. So be sure to smash that like button. Be sure to, you know, let our sponsors know that, you know, we appreciate them and you appreciate them. And I better end the show, Ezzy, with a sponsor, because without sponsors, we don't have a show. So a big thank you to all the sponsors of the Illegal Curve Hockey who make the post-game show, the Saturday show, and the website a possibility. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Zappia Group Realty, Betway, Bernstein's Deli, Tough Duck, Boston Pizza, Seagram's, Rolly's Transfer, and Grid Park. Support these fine businesses because of their continued support of Illegal Curve Hockey. So that should pretty much do it for our show today, as we thank everyone for joining us this Saturday morning.
Awesome show. I love it. Dave M., just the two of us, the dynamic duo.
Well,
I'll do it all day long. Mindell, stay away as long as you want.
But thanks to Frosty Winnipeg, because I saw Frosty Winnipeg who said, let's thank the sponsors. And I may have forgotten, you know, I didn't know the Big Island of Hawaii was a sponsor, but thanks to the Big Island of Hawaii. And thanks to all of you for being in the chat.
I'm still jealous.
Without you, we don't have a show. That's true. But without you guys, we don't have a show. Ronnie, he's the only guy who misses. Ronnie's the only guy who misses Drew. We'll
give me some of that tan, Dave M. I'm too pasty here. I need a little bit of that.
I was wearing SPF 50 and I still scorched. So, I mean, just,
Ridiculously hot every single day?
It was. The spot was like no rain. So, I mean, it was, I'm not going to lie.
Because it was ridiculously cold here in Winnipeg every single day.
No, I know. It was, I'm not going to rub it in your face and say it was 25 to 30 every single day and spectacular. But
Dave, if I went to Hawaii and you were in Winnipeg, I would be rubbing it in your face all day long.
I was
on the beach. I was surfing. Drinking some tropical drinks, I would do it.
I could definitely see the pictures of Ezzy drinking pina coladas. So, anyways,
I would actually if I was in Hawaii, I'd be on a spit, Dave, and you would actually just see me rotating, like
we're going to a luau, and there's Ezzy. They put the pig on the spit. Anyways, thanks very much for everyone. Like I said, everyone for joining us in the chat. You guys make it fun to do the show each and every Saturday morning, and
of course, good show, everybody.
After every single Jets game. So, well, thank you guys. Have a great rest of your Saturday afternoon and evening, and we'll look forward to you joining us tomorrow night on the Illegal Curve post game show. And of course, stay tuned to illegalcurve.com. The Moose play tonight against Chicago against the Wolves in Chicago at 7 p.m. We'll have coverage of that. Have
the Moose ever played the Wolves before?
Yeah, they have, but not as much as Milwaukee. They played 11 games against Milwaukee this year. Their 12th game is coming up, I think, on the 24th. So they play Milwaukee quite a bit. They played Chicago like that. They were supposed to, of course, in the COVID year where the season got canceled, but lots still to come on illegalcurve.com. So make sure you go to the website, smash the like button, leave us a review. And like I said, most importantly, have a great and healthy rest of your Saturday, everyone. Thanks a lot for joining us. I'm Dave Manuk. That's Ezra Ginsberg. And you've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel, follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, illegalcurve.com.